location because it's a desirable place to live. We have lots of jobs here, et cetera. And our roads will never catch up. Ultimately, we have to look for more and more alternatives, quite frankly.
And folks, this is not just an issue in Virginia or Northern Virginia. It's across the nation. We've mentioned several other states where these fees occur. And basically, it's about legislatures playing with the law. We have this law. It's in our Constitution, apparently the Virginia Constitution, that fines go to schools, and they're playing with it. They're playing with fees and fines and everything. I think legislatures should just tell the truth to the voter, but that may never happen. George Burke, thank you for coming here on the Inside Scoop. Tune in to Inside Virginia. For those of you in Virginia, starting tomorrow at 7 p.m., keep tuning in to the Inside Scoop at RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine signing off.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
federal judge threw out the lawsuit filed by former CIA agent Valerie Flame against the Bush administration. Flame sued the administration for conspiring to leak her undercover identity in 2003. Her lawyers admitted the suit was a long shot since public officials are usually immune from such lawsuits. Iraq's new government is making some progress. That's the latest word from Ryan Crockett, the U.S. diplomat in Iraq. Crockett testified this morning before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He told members the recent troop buildup is just now hitting its stride. The nation's economy could be headed toward a slump. The conference board's index of leading economic indicators released today showed a 0.3% decline last month. That's 2 points higher than analysts expected. The news on the nation's economy didn't affect Wall Street, as stocks edged higher today. Profit earnings in the tech sector seem to boost confidence for investors. We'll have a full report coming up in our business segment. Russia will expel 4 British embassy staff in a disagreement over Moscow's refusal to extradite the man suspected of Alexander Litvinenko's murder. Federal prosecutors in Brazil want to shut down Brazil's busiest airport until the investigation into the country's worst air crash is complete. 186 people died when a TAM jet overshot the runway and crashed into a warehouse Tuesday night. Suicide bombers struck a convoy of Chinese workers in southern Pakistan, and then another bomb was detonated near a mosque in an army camp. A total of 51 people were killed in both bombings. The violence is the latest in the week since the army stormed a mosque held by Islamic extremists. This is QNN.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating.
Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
In Rome, archaeologists uncovered a 2-story communal bath complex, revealing the luxury ancient Romans enjoyed. Saunas, changing rooms, mosaic floors, and marble latrines have been found preserved in the earth on the 5-acre-plus site. Botulism has been found in cans of hot dog chili sauce. The FDA is urging consumers to throw away any 10-ounce cans produced by Castleberry, Kroger, or Ostex. A landmark study released in London yesterday shows that all of mankind originated from a single area in sub-Saharan Africa about 50,000 years ago. The Associated Press reports widespread problems in FEMA's payment schedule to contractors hired to clean up after Hurricane Katrina. Some companies say the federal government's owed them millions of dollars for more than a year. Apple's hot new iPhone is jamming up the wireless network at Duke University. The school is working on fixing the problem. It seems just one iPhone could have flooded the network, and it has about 150 signed on. The nation's economy could be headed toward a slump, according to the Conference Board's Index of Leading Economic Indicators. The numbers showed a 3% decline last month. Light sweet crude is trading at $75.92 a barrel at the close of Wall Street. The Dow ended up 82 points to break through that 14,000 mark. The NASDAQ is up 21, the S&P up 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! When it's high summer in the mountains, you think of cool glades with tiny streams that run down in the crevices between the mountains and the babbling of water over ancient rock. And you think of a place that is removed from the parching heat of the deep south and southwest. It ain't here, baby! No, no, no. In the places that Massey Energy has not yet turned into a desert moonscape, it's pretty hellish here. I mean, we're at a decent elevation, and, you know, you beg for a breeze. I mean, yeah, we're Agnes and me, we're one step away from naked radio. I'm not kidding. I always, one of my, you know, as you're well familiar with the fact that one of my favorite books is Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. And one of my favorite passages from that book occurs early on. Of course, it's one favorite passage after another in that wonderful, wonderful text. But she describes her hometown of the fictitious Macomb, Alabama. The reality of Macomb is, of course, Monroeville, Alabama. Being in Alabama, you have to say Ville. You can't say Ville, it's Ville. Monroeville. As if it's just too hot to get the whole damned word out. But she described Macomb and said it was a tired old town, where men's stiff collars wilted by 9 in the morning and ladies were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum. That's pretty much us, too, and apparently it's New York City and it's the entire eastern half of the United States, the better part of the Southwest, and sweltering heat even in the Great Northwest, if I hear correctly. Welcome to the global warming that ain't. Welcome to a world where, as I said, cool mountain glens are buried under megatons of rubble from hilltops, where tiny streams that are the capillaries of the mighty Mississippi and the Ohio River are buried and killed forevermore in an endless, greedy, anxious lust for seams of coal that are maybe 3 inches, 4 inches thick. Welcome to Dick Cheney's America. You know, for years now we've called it Bushmerica. But no, unlike right-wing yammerheads, I will tell you when I am wrong, and I have, yea, verily, been wrong for, lo, these many years. It ain't Bushmerica, it's Dickmerica. If you've been following up the postings from the Washington Post, otherwise known as the Day Late and a Dollar Short Gazette, you will know that Dick Cheney, and it all just, oh God, it makes so much sense looking back. How could you not just know it was happening? There's nothing secret here. He was acting true to form. The same guy that went to hunt clubs where they took captive nets full of hundreds of birds and turned them loose for him to fire scattershot into their poor, innocent little hopeless, didn't have a chance in the first place bodies. That same guy, we find out reading the Washington Post, is personally responsible for the deaths of some 77,000 coho salmon. Oh! There is no thing alive upon planet Earth that these rapacious sons of bitches don't want to get their hands around its neck and squeeze until its juices come out its mouth. They are walking death. In the Klamath Basin of Oregon, there was a drought. It was a bad drought. and the Klamath River had been tapped for quite some time to provide irrigation to fields that were otherwise desert. Oh, they're making the desert bloom. The desert ain't supposed to bloom. It's supposed to be a desert. So Dick Cheney, shortly after taking office... Do you remember that line from the Downing Street memo? What did the British say? They had determined to fix the facts around the intelligence. Was that what it was? It's kind of like feed a fever and starve a cold. I can never remember which way it's supposed to go. They were either fixing the facts around the intelligence or fixing the intelligence around the facts. I can't remember. But they did the same thing in the Great Northwest in the Klamath Basin. The fish were dying because the irrigation was taking away too much water out of the Klamath River. And Dick Cheney got into office and said, "Screw the fish! I ain't going to be going up there fishing anytime soon. I don't care about fish." And he hammered and he squeezed and he pressed and he twisted until he got his avaricious way so that he could appease a little tiny voting bloc in Oregon because they wanted to make sure they carried Oregon for the Republican Party in 2002. That's right. Life itself was subverted to political partisan goals. What an evil, evil man. You know, all the caricatures are beginning to fail for it. Darth Cheney, yes! But it turned out Darth Vader had a human side. Dick doesn't! And here in Dickmerica, we will destroy entire species for nothing more than transitory, passing, stinking politics. And then on down the river, it turned out a few years later that the whole damn fishing industry died, and it cost us $15 million to prop up the losses of from the evil that Dick Cheney had personally seen happen. And by the way. The farmers that we were propping up with the irrigation from the Klamath River, we wound up paying them not to grow stuff! We irrigated nothing! I'm sorry, I don't mean to start out screaming, but I missed yesterday, and I was so bad off yesterday, I wrote this, for me, humongous freaking essay. Here in the first decade of the 21st century, we call it a blog post. Bless Bart Kopp's heart. It's up at his site today. Thanks, Bart. It's also up at opednews.com. It's up at our own site. Death follows Dick Cheney, and Dick Cheney casts a shadow of death over us all here captive in Dickmerica. But that wasn't the end of the story of the environmental shenanigans. Christy Todd Whitman. You know, we all giggle when we hear somebody say that they are leaving the Bush administration because they want to nudge, nudge, wink, wink, nudge as good as a wink as a blonde man, say no more. Spend more time with my family. Well, that's what we got from Christy Todd Whitman, Bush's first EPA secretary. She said she was going to step down because she wanted to spend more time with her family. Well, it turns out that maybe she did, but the real reason she left was because Dick Cheney was hell-bent on violating the most fundamental rules regarding noxious, toxic, coal-fired power plants. Thanks, Mark Levine. It is fixing the facts around the intelligence. I was right the first time. God, you guys are good. No, Christy Todd Whitman bailed out because the Bush administration under Dick... No. Excuse me. You know, we got to change this all. It's not a war, it's an occupation. And it's not a Bush administration, it's the Dick administration. This is abundantly clear now. What I would like to know, however, is how long, oh Lord, how long the Washington Post sat on this story before they published it. Because we know that the ineffective, limper than a wet noodle mainstream professional media sits on stuff until they have permission from the Bush administration. I'm sorry, I did it again. The Dick administration to go ahead. You remember the wiretapping bill? You remember the whole disclosure of the stinking domestic spying that we could have known about before the 2004 election and might have given us President Kerry? But the New York Times said, oh, Jesus, no, that would be unfair. Golly. So we didn't get the story. How long has the Washington Post been waiting before it started telling us what it actually knew about the Dick administration? Is that a fair question to ask? I think it is. But no, it wasn't just the fish kill. It wasn't just the 77,000 dead endangered salmon that had only been spawning in the Klamath River Basin for the past 150,000 to 3 million years. Okay, I'm getting hyperbolic. They'd only been spawning there since the end of the last ice age. Get it right, Bob. Jeez, nobody'll take you seriously like that, dude. No, it wasn't just the fish kill. And it wasn't just the fact that they dummied up the science to support the fish kill, to send the water to the farmers that they were then going to pay taxpayer farmer welfare to keep them from growing anything in the first place and didn't need the water at all. No. It was also about power and electricity and coal-fired power plants that spew poison all over the southeastern United States, all over the United States of America, and involve the destruction of an area of Appalachia, a reduction to wasteland, to desert moonscape of an area of Appalachia the size of the entire state of Delaware. No, it wasn't just that. Baby, there was money involved. Whitman left the meeting with the feeling that, quote, the decision had already been made. Cheney had a clear mandate from the president on all things energy-related, she said, and while she could take her case directly to Bush, quote, you leave with the vice presidents still there, so together they would then shape policy. Whitman had already announced her resignation, saying she wanted to spend more time with her family, but the real reason, she said, was the new rule. The new rule that would allow more filth, more poison into our air, our water, our lungs, the very substructure of our cellular beings. With regard to the new rule, Christy Todd Whitman said, I just couldn't sign it. The president has a right to have an administrator who could defend it, and I just couldn't. The article ends on this note. A federal appeals court has since found that the rule change pushed through by the Dick of Death violated the Clean Air Act In that ruling, the judges said that the administration had redefined the law in a way that could be valid, quote, only in a Humpty Dumpty world. Gee, what a combination. Mean and evil and stupid. That's our Dick. Mean, evil, and stupid. Maybe that should you know, the religion industry, this is, after all, Wednesday. The religion industry is forever worrying about the next thing, you know, the atheists will want to take In God We Trust off the money. Maybe we should. Maybe we should replace it with those three precious words that apply most thoroughly to the Dick administration. Mean, evil, and stupid. How stupid do you have to be to try to kill every fragile living thing on planet Earth? But they're doing that. Fish. Little bitty captive birds in nets. It's a lot more fun to kill by the hundreds or by the thousands than it is to kill one at a time. Because see, back with the fish issue... Oh, say that a few times fast. Back with the fish issue, when the Dick administration decided to send the water out of the river and over to the farms of the people who weren't going to grow anything in the first place because they were being paid not to, well, the fishermen filed lawsuits, and the courts ruled that the new irrigation plan violated the Endangered Species Act, just like they'd been told by their biological scientists whom they overruled. Mean, evil, and stupid. We're joined by our good buddy and fellow Horn host, Mark Levine. Hey, Mark.
Hey, I'm good. I got to turn down my internet radio.
Do that.
I just did. I was just listening to you, mean, evil, and stupid, and I guess I have a slight disagreement. At least when it comes to Dick Cheney, he's mean, he's evil, but he ain't stupid.
But Mark, it turns out that all these brilliant these Montgomery Burns, Bart, you know, Simpson's plans, they've cost us a fortune.
Right, but that's not. You have to look at the goals. If you were trying to help the American people, it would be stupid. If you were trying to help taxpayers or farmers or the environment, it would be stupid. But if you're trying to line the pockets of your political supporters, it's very smart indeed.
I see that. But I think we're dealing here. I mean, you've read the article, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think we're dealing here with things that they never even dreamed possible. I mean, these guys for all their vaunted policy wonkishness and how they make up their own reality and all of that, they never imagined they wouldn't get away with it.
Well, that's true with everything they do. That's true with everything they do.
So what do we do? Mean, evil, and
diabolical is my choice of words.
Okay. Diabolical? I like diabolical.
I'll tell you who's stupid. I mean, the president ain't very smart. I mean, there's certainly a lot of stupid people in the administration. I mean, you read the four-part series on Cheney, which I highly recommend to everyone to read, all four parts. It'll take you a while, and you may have to vomit a few times in between. It's understandable. But, I mean, look at someone like Harriet Myers or Attorney Fredo Gonzalez. Now, they're stupid.
Yeah.
They will do whatever their boss tells them to do. You know, oh, go torture and kill a few Americans. Yes, sir, boss. I mean, they remind me of those thugs, you know. And
then Harriet turns around and sends a Christmas. You are the coolest president ever.
Yeah, no, they're stupid. They're stupid. And the president ain't much smarter. I mean, basically, whatever Dick Cheney tells him, he does it as long as he gets to, you know, wear the flight suit and carry the scepter and run around and say, look, Daddy, I'm king. There are definitely stupid people in the Bush administration. I agree with you. I just wanted to call and say, Dick Cheney... he's not stupid, unfortunately.
Well, what do you think about this business of defunding him? Is Rahm Emanuel just playing games? Is this just a ha-ha-ha?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, I don't know if you've told your listeners, and I'm going to talk about this more tomorrow on my show, But Dick Cheney, he claims that he doesn't have to disclose classified material, which is required by executive order for everyone within the executive branch. You have to at least list the material that you're holding.
Right, and that's not just any executive order. That's an executive order that George Bush signed.
Right. Well, Clinton signed it. Bush signed it. Every president has signed it. And it's throughout the executive branch. It's everybody. It's the president, it's the CIA, it's the FBI. But Dick Cheney says he's not in the executive branch.
That doesn't apply to me.
The vice president of the United States apparently says he's in the Senate because he can break ties there, and therefore he doesn't have to comply with the order that applies to everyone within the executive branch.
Right, and as a consequence, since he's not in the executive branch, Rahm Emanuel is threatening to pull his funding.
Exactly. Exactly. Of course, if he were in the legislative branch, he'd have to disclose everything, one on his energy commission, but in that instance, he was in the executive branch. So maybe he has his own branch. Maybe he could just go on a branch and we can saw him off.
Yeah, oh God, I'd love to. I'd love to. I was thinking the other night, last night, I had this vision of Dick seeking ultimate power, and I just thought, Dick, it's in the microwave. Ultimate power. The last little scrap of power is in the microwave. Go to the microwave, Dick. Go to the microwave.
Stick your head in.
Oh, Lord, they drive me crazy. You know, 77,000 dead endangered salmon.
I just wanted to be clear. They think we're stupid, but they're not stupid. The two people running the country, and there is another one. It's not just Dick Cheney. Karl Rove is also running the country. Karl Rove tends to do most of the political and domestic stuff, and Cheney tends to do the foreign and policy stuff. But Rove is almost as powerful as Cheney.
Yeah.
He's number two, and he ain't stupid either. The two of them make 90% of all decisions. People thought it was
but their themselves. But their thuggery becomes so transparent and so predictable. I mean, for all your urbane wit and sophistication, Mark, you are at heart a Southern boy.
Yes,
Nashvillian
sir.
That you are.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Have you followed any of this stuff about the machinations down in Alabama?
Are you talking about the Homeland Security?
No, the entire cooked up, dummied up, ginned up, faked up prosecution of Don Siegelman that went down in the last couple of years.
I don't tell me about it.
Oh God, you got it. You got to read it.
I'm following national politics to see what's going on in Alabama. What's going on?
It hit the New York Times.
Oh, okay.
It's bad enough. A Republican woman by the name of Dana Simpson has come out and signed, you know, sworn affidavit, you know, stuck the hand in the ear, put the hand on the Bible, all of that business, and put her autograph on the paper, that where she says that she was party to a meeting at which the prosecution of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman on bribery and corruption charges was discussed, and the current governor's people were there, the Republican Party of Alabama's people were there, George Bush's people were there, and one of the operatives said, "Don't worry, it's all taken care of. Carl's got it locked up tight." So then they mount this prosecution of Don Siegelman, and it's Alabama politics, so it's got to be a little bit dirty one way or the other. But he's basically prosecuted for doing something that wasn't criminal in the first place.
Well, Bob, you know what his crime was?
Being a Democrat.
Exactly. That's exactly his crime. That's what I was going to say.
I mean, this is political thuggery that, I mean, it doesn't have that you know, James Bond background music to it like we always used to ascribe to Karl Rove. This is dumb street punk stuff. This is the sap in the back of the neck in broad daylight, and everybody sees it.
It's funny. Republicans used to condemn the Soviet Union. Why? When they do the exact same thing.
Yeah, this is.
I mean, this is Kremlin machinations. Oh, let's trump up some charges. Let's have a show trial. Let's make up something. I mean, heck, they took John Kerry's got a lot of faults, but one of them isn't being a coward or not a hero. He's definitely a hero compared to these people. I mean, I was just it's not just George Bush. Dick Cheney had 5 deferments.
Yeah.
A man that has killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and 3,500 of America's finest. But they mess with his record and convince people that he's not a hero? I mean,
that's a whole show, Mark.
Strength?
That's a whole show.
Truth is ignorance?
Yeah, up is down, black is white, night is
war
day.
Peace.
War is peace. Yeah, that the fact that we stood there, our party, us Democrats, stood there in August of 2004 and were told from the podium of the Democratic National Convention, don't say anything bad about George.
Well, you remember what John Kerry said at that, I don't know if people don't remember, but I remember his speech very well. He said, I am not going to have a negative campaign. They may try it, but I'm not going to go be negative. So what did they do? John Kerry put on his boxing gloves, and they kicked him in the nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they Rochambeau'd
him. And he kicked back because, you know, he was believed in playing fair.
Sure, sure. And then for Christmas dinner, and see, this is one of the things that, there are moments, Mark, when it's really hard to stay a Democrat, and this was one of them. At the Republican National Convention, there on the standing on the smoking bodies of 9/11, Arnold Schwarzenegger took the stand and said, "Don't be economic girly men." Okay. Then, after it was all said and done, after the November presidential election was over, after John Kerry had walked away with $40 million still in his war chest that he didn't use to fight in Ohio, you know who he had Christmas dinner with?
Arnold?
Sun Valley, Idaho, Mark Levine, with Arnold and Maria.
How nice.
And if that's the point that I looked up and went, well, I'll be damned, it is wrestling. Like I said, there are times it's hard to be a Democrat. It was hard to be a Democrat yesterday.
Yeah, but you know what? We can be proud of the Democrats today. Let's praise them when they deserve it.
Yeah, sure.
The Senate Judiciary Committee did an hour and a half ago, if they follow through on it, and that's a big if, I admit that, could change the course of American history.
If they follow through.
Dick Cheney is classic. Remember, what was the final thing that brought down Richard Nixon? They subpoenaed the documents. He refused to turn them over. The Supreme Court, which at that time believed in the rule of law, I don't know about that today, but at that time, they ordered 9-0, he had to turn over the documents.
And that's when the House of Cards came apart.
Because he was doing illegal conduct. Now, the warrantless wiretapping is illegal conduct. The courts had already found it illegal conduct. So it should be a direct, you know, U.S. v. Nixon, 9-0. Unfortunately,
it's the Senate doing it. It all has to start in the House of Representatives.
No. First, at least in the Nixon way, first came the Supreme Court decision demanding he turn over the tapes.
Right.
They found the tapes. Then they had the 18.5-minute gap. Then they had the smoking gun. Then it was in the House of Representatives.
Right.
I mean, that's how it went down in Nixon's era. And okay. That's how it could go down here if, as I absolutely suspect, I'd bet 100-1 that Dick Cheney refuses to comply with that subpoena. I mean, I'd bet 1,000-1. It's a pretty easy bet. The question is what happens then and whether we can trust the courts today like we could in 1974. I fear we can't.
I don't think we can.
I know.
I don't mean just the Supreme Court. I mean the packed D.C. Circuit.
Them all.
I mean the packed D.C. federal bench, the trial court level.
Sandra Day O'Connor, it's all your fault.
Yeah, it really
all
is.
Your fault. You chose this guy to be president in violation of the American people. All the courts, all the future, it's all your fault. And the reason I blame you is because I think that she has a tiny bit of a conscience somewhere. So the others, I suspect, are 100% evil. But this is a woman who should have known better.
Yeah, it was. And of course... There's other stuff that is incidental to what you're describing.
People should know what I'm talking about in case anyone's confused.
Yeah, you're talking about Bush v. Gore. Yeah, Bush v. Gore.
Right. I just want to make that 150% clear.
Yeah, without Sandra Day O'Connor, it's 5-4. Bush
four
loses
four
Bush v.
Gore,
Gore and Gore is the president. 9/11 doesn't happen, and we're not in Iraq.
Votes get counted, and Gore wins.
Yeah.
And we have surpluses, and we don't have war, and we don't have the whole world hating us. And, yeah, Osama bin Laden's around, but there's a plan to do
it. Who knows? He might be dead. I mean, these guys, remember, Mark, please, the Bush, the Clinton-Gore administration, for whatever our more left-leaning friends may say, you know, oh, they were evil, they caught the people who did the first bombing of the World Trade Center and put the bastards in prison. I mean, they put them under the prison. They caught the people with the Millennium Plot in 2000. They caught. And they prosecuted legally and justly and properly and under the rules and laws that apply to people charged with crimes in the United States. And after those proper prosecutions, those nice, fair trials, they put them away forever.
And in 1998, before anyone knew the name Osama bin Laden, Bill Clinton missed him by a few hours with some judiciously dropped bombs after the bombing of the USS Cole. He responded. He almost got Osama bin Laden, far closer than George Bush did, without the provocation. And what did the Republicans say at the time? How dare Bill Clinton...
He's wagging the dog.
Wag the dog. Who cares about Osama bin Laden? Who cares about Afghanistan? What matters is what Bill Clinton is getting consensually behind closed doors. That is the most important issue facing America today. Terrorism be damned.
Okay, now let's take the logical next step, Mark. Whether it's Dennis Kucinich's bill of impeachment against Cheney or the stuff that comes out of these subpoenas that aren't going to be honored, we've got plenty of grounds for moving against this administration.
Yes, we do.
How high does the mound of impeachable evidence have to get before Nancy Pelosi quits this business of impeachment? It's off the table.
Not that high. Bob, I'll tell you what. Nancy Pelosi is following the American people. She's following the poll. If you get polls where 60-70% of American people support impeachment, it's on the table, baby. And to do that, you need to have smoking gun after smoking gun after smoking gun. It's all, I mean, the Washington Post is just the beginning. It's all there. The evidence is there. You just subpoena it. They either turn it over, which they won't, or they, unfortunately, they're going to run the clock. We're going to lose this game, I fear, because they're going to run the clock. They're going to say no. They're going to take them to court. The court's going to say turn it over. Then they'll turn over partial, but not all. They'll go back to court. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's all there. Oop, clock ran out. Time's up.
You know, I don't know how much of a classics person you are, Mark, but there is a great example of just this situation in ancient history. If you're bored some evening, go and read one of Cicero's orations and read the history behind the prosecution of a man named Verres, V-E-R-R-E-S.
Okay.
Because Cicero faced the exact same problem. He was, you know, back then the terms were 1 year for the consuls. And once the term was up, he was out of office as the prosecutor and couldn't do anything. And this guy had been a monster. And he took a look at the rules and came in, brought the prosecution against Verres, and they thought the very same thing, that they would run the clock out. And he took a look at his strategy and said, not going to do it the way they used to do it. I'm doing it this way, and changed his procedure and busted him before even the 1 year term could run out.
Here's the thing, and you and I made
we need some hardcore strategizing.
Here's the thing. It's really Nancy Pelosi is not stopping this discussion. What we need to do, and what the Democrats are doing, and blessed be their souls, they finally did the right thing today. Issue subpoena, demand documents, gather up the evidence, throw it in the press, convince the American people. George Bush already has a 26% approval rating,
and that's Congress has a 23%
American history.
Yeah. Well. Right now, George Bush has slipped below Jimmy Carter, and he's 3 points from Richard Nixon.
That's right.
The Congress of the United States, at present, has the same approval rating as Richard Nixon.
And I think they see that. And I think you're going to see that. At least maybe some of this is optimism and putting my hopes ahead of my predictions. But I think the Democrats are going to step up to it, particularly in September. There's going to be some changes on Iraq. But mostly for impeachment, we need to get the facts. We need to get them all. The Washington Post has done a great start. Grab them, subpoena them, get the facts, present them to the American people, convince the 74% that are unhappy with George Bush that he's not just a bad president, he's a criminal president. And frankly, Vice President Cheney has to be impeached first. There I absolutely agree with Dennis Kucinich. Impeach Cheney first. In fact, I would actually impeach Ashcroft first because he's the easiest picking. The
you mean Gonzalez?
Yeah. I meant, excuse me. I did mean Gonzalez.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to let go of John, though. a guy that weird doesn't leave your psyche that quickly.
Sorry.
Well, what do you think of what Sally Quinn has put forward? Did you catch her opining over the last couple of days?
I didn't.
Okay, you know, she is deemed to be the social doyenne of D.C., and she wrote an opinion piece recently stating that even if the Democrats won't do it, the Republicans are already planning to get rid of Dick, even before the Washington Post articles came out. And that
she doesn't mean before his term ends.
Yes, she does.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Here's what she says. Tell me what you think.
Okay.
She says that when Dick goes in to have his batteries changed, which will happen next month.
Some doctor will do us all a favor.
Well, nah, devoutly to be wished. Oh, damn, I left that burrito in the microwave. Hey, Dick's dead. No. They'll just come out and issue a rather grave warning that Vice President Cheney can no longer stand up to the rigors of the job. And, you know, he's just got to step down for health reasons.
Well, look, I mean, I have no doubt that when we have 67 votes in the Senate for impeachment, even if we have 60, impeachment will be not only on the table, but will be on its way to conviction, and then Cheney will resign for health reasons. That's the difference between Democrats and Republicans, right? Republicans know they're guilty. I mean, Dixon, resign before you can impeach him. Democrats, you know, fight it out, whether it's the Bill Clinton or Andrew Johnson back in the 1860s.
Yep. But I don't know. It seemed terribly plausible.
Yeah, a lot of it's wishful thinking.
Sure. And then they install an elder statement like, James Baker III in the vice presidency, just to shepherd George to the end of his term.
Yeah. He'd be the one to do it.
Yeah. Mark, I've enjoyed the heck out of this conversation.
I have too. It's your show. I got to give it back to you, Bob. I've enjoyed listening to you.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely.
Let's do it soon.
Talk to you later.
Later, Mark. And of course, catch Mark tomorrow evening at 5 p.m. Eastern, right before this program. What a 1-2 punch, huh? Let's keep it rolling. Go to the phone. Calling from Florida, Larry. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How are you?
Ah, just fine. Hey, it's too bad Mark's gone. I'd like to ask him about what would be the possibility of some prosecutor somewhere getting an indictment up. You know, I really don't care whether he's impeached. I'd rather have him indicted first.
And that opens a whole legal can of worms, and you have to go back and revisit all the Clinton versus whichever, what was her name? I've forgotten now. With the nose. The question of whether or not you can indict a sitting member of the elected member of the executive branch. I'd like to see indictments, too. Frankly, you've got a better chance of seeing indictment after they're out of office, and I'm not willing to wait that long. I don't know about you. Mark says he'll address this tomorrow in his show, by the way.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah, you know, I think it was a terrible mistake to let Richard Nixon off. I think a president in a striped suit would have set a good example. And we're probably going to need that if we're going to clean things up.
I agree because, and that's why when we were busy deifying the dead Gerald Ford and everybody went, oh, he was a good man, he healed our nation. I said, you know, bug spray. He hurt our nation. He hindered the due process of law upon which this nation is founded. Richard Nixon needed to be tried and convicted and imprisoned.
Right. A little time on the rock pile would have done wonders.
Yeah, making little ones out of big ones. I'm a big fan of it. They do that very well at Leavenworth.
Yeah, and you say you're from Alabama?
Born and raised there, yeah.
Okay, I lived there for 26 years, so I know that they actually did have a rock pile for a while.
Yes, they did. They absolutely did. What part of Alabama?
I lived in Huntsville.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm from the Shoals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Just next door.
Yeah. In fact, it used to be this long, lonesome drive between Florence and Huntsville, and now it's just a zip through this endless sprawl that runs all the way from Florence through Athens to Huntsville itself. It's all liquor.
Oh, yeah.
It's all liquor stores and car dealers now, and title loan companies.
Yeah, I guess some of the counties that were dry are no longer dry.
No, they went wet right after I went to college. I came up through high school having to make the tortured run of the 11-mile run to the Tennessee state line.
Oh yeah. We had some friends over there in the Shoals, and it was pretty grim.
but it was also always fun because every time somebody would bring up a liquor referendum, the bootleggers and the the local council, the local churches would get together and form the Shoals Area Citizens for Decency and Morality. And the primary donors were, the bootleggers and the fundamentalist churches.
Oh, don't you know that all the bootleggers were deacons?
You're darn right. You know, that's one of the oldest jokes in the world about religious differences. Let's see, Roman Catholics don't recognize Muhammad, Protestants don't recognize the Pope, and Baptists don't recognize each other at the liquor store.
Right, and there's always a back door and a place to park in the back so you don't have to be seen.
Exactly. God rest his soul, my father was asked by a man who was a deacon in a local church to pick him up a pint, and my dad said, sure, and then he went, why can't you go? Oh, I might be seen. I said, well, then you don't need to drink. I'll walk in the front door just like anybody. Oh, God. Yeah, there's not the, I love that culture.
Yeah.
In many ways. And in other ways, I hate it. Just despise it and loathe it.
It took me about 10 years to learn how alien it really was to the culture I'd grown up with.
Oh, when I moved out of the Deep South, and people looked at me and I'd say, well, you know, I grew up in a dry county. And they'd go, a dry what? A what county? And then you'd have to explain to them, and they'd look, oh, God, they'd look, I had a buddy from Wisconsin who said, huh? They actually do that down there? And yeah, they do. Nothing but vanilla extract and cooking sherry that's turned to vinegar.
Right. Yeah, when I moved there, why, they sold beer in beverage stores that had to be a certain number of square feet. It couldn't be over or under. And they had to be separated from any other business.
Exactly.
And, at that time, they were selling wine only in the state stores.
And if the things remain the same, and I think they do, just a little ways over to the west to this day in the college town of Oxford, Mississippi, where the University of Mississippi sits, you cannot buy a cold 12-pack of beer.
Yeah.
You got to drive 30 miles to get cold beer.
I was at a place in Texas that's that way about a year ago. You could go to a club. One place in Texas, you know, I went to a restaurant, said, well, I have a beer with my steak, and they said, well, we're dry, but we can sell you a membership in the club for $1.
Mm-hmm. And the old laws in places like Oklahoma where you had to bring your own liquor in and then you paid them a bunch of money for the setups?
That's right. I saw that in, I think it was Chattanooga, Tennessee a long time ago.
Right.
And I was looking, you know, this is pretty rude of these people to bring their own liquor, you know. You ought to buy it from the restaurant, until somebody explained it to me.
That's the law.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a crazy culture, but I would like to see something done here. The violation of the FISA Act, which actually has a criminal aspect to it.
Yeah, it's got criminal penalties built into it. Yes, it absolutely does.
Yeah, it's like $5, 5 years for one violation. So we may have millions of violations.
Suffice to say, there are enough violations of FISA to put Cheney and or Bush away for the rest of their natural lives.
Yeah, let alone the life of the universe or something like that.
Precisely. And the same thing applies to the torture, Larry. One of the reasons that they redefined, and all of this, if you read the Washington Post articles, a lot of this comes out of the fulminated settlings that passed for a brain of a lawyer named David Addington. And Addington is the one who, over Gonzalez's signature, declared that the Geneva Conventions didn't apply and said that they were quaint. We blamed Fredo for those words. It turns out it was Addington's. But the thing is, the reason they did all of that dancing around is just as what you described with the FISA Act. Violation of the Geneva Conventions and torture constitutes a felony against the 1996 federal anti-torture bill.
That's right.
War Crimes Act.
I think that's a 20-year one.
I believe so. Hard time.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, it being a treaty, it's the law of the land.
Yeah, and well, what the 1996 War Crimes Act does is it incorporates, by reference, the Geneva Conventions.
Right.
And it makes a felony you know, prison time, hard time crime out of violating the Geneva Conventions. And that's where all of these sick machinations came from. And the thing that they have to be taught, I think, Larry, is that just saying you're not breaking the law does not mean it. That you cannot, by executive fiat, simply override the acts of the legislative branch.
Right. Right. There's we have separation of powers, right?
Mm-hmm. And it was Nixon, wasn't it, Larry? It was Nixon who said, "Well, if the president does it, it can't be illegal." Remember that? He said that to David Frost.
Right.
Well, they've taken that and put the bit in their teeth and run with it. But if that's the case, then there's no point in having them swear to uphold the Constitution.
Right.
So one of these has to be true, and the other one, by definition, has to be untrue. If the president can do anything he wants to and cannot break the law because he's the president, then that means the Constitution is, as George Bush called it, a GD piece of paper.
Right.
If, however, it's the fundamental rock upon which our republic stands, then the president has to be subject to the criminal laws of this nation.
Well, unless you own the Supreme Court.
Well, there's that. And they do. They do. That's what makes it so sickening every time I think back to the way that we begged and pleaded with Democrats in the Senate to stop Samuel Alito, because they had already greased the rails and sent John Roberts sailing into the Chief Justice. So we said, "Oh, well, this guy's a little bit freaky, so let's not let him in." And no, we got statements from senior senators with ancient reputations who said that they believed that Judge Alito will stand up for a religion in America.
Right. Right. Now we've got a 5-4 majority of Catholics.
Well, let's see. Thomas, Roberts, Scalia, Alito. Is Kennedy Roman Catholic?
Yes.
Yep, there we go. The papal cabal that rules the world. Or at least the country.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to sound all Art Bell on that or anything, but, I mean, it is what it is.
You know, I used to think those people were crazy, but I'm starting to wonder.
I know. It kind of makes me wonder what's in the chemtrails these days.
Yeah. You know, would a future administration sign extradition papers on some of these people? I know some of them are wanted overseas.
I think there's a couple of countries that would like to get hold of a certain Mr. Kissinger.
Yes.
And I would love to have an executive office, executive branch that would say, "Come and get him. This guy's a crook. Come get him. We want nothing to do with him. We disavow all knowledge of his actions. Goodbye. See you, Henry."
Yeah.
You'll look nice in stripes.
Right. Right. I think Milosevic died, so there's a cell open.
Yeah, there is a bunk open in The Hague.
Yeah.
Although I think they'd be more than happy to provide him all the accommodations he could ever want in Chile.
Oh, yeah.
The Cambodians might like to have a little cup of coffee with Henry.
Yeah. That'd be short-term accommodations.
Yeah, the shorter the better, as far as I'm concerned. But I'm mean. Hey, Larry, such a pleasure talking with you. I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. And again, Mark Levine will address Larry's issue that he raised about the indictment as opposed to the impeachment of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney tomorrow on his program. We got time to get one more call in. Let me tell you, right after the top of the second hour, we're going to be talking with Eric Bollert. He's a senior advisor. You probably are well familiar with him. At Media Matters for America. He's also an author. His book is available on the website at headonradionetwork.com. What we're going to be talking about is this fascination that PBS developed with Frank Luntz. Let's talk to David, calling from Maine for a couple of minutes. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
What's happening?
Not much, man, not much. So I was checking out the hysteria on the Elizabeth Edwards thing. I don't know what you've said your reaction is.
I made a promise to a listener earlier today not to even talk about it.
Not to even talk about it.
But I said that does not, however, put any prescriptions upon the callers.
Yeah, I'm going to say something where I don't say anything about the person or about the, just basically this. I listened to Randy Rhoads, and not 1 hour, not 2 hours, but 3 hours she talked about this, and I was like, good God, you're just giving her exactly what you want, what she wants. You're giving exactly what these people, what they want. They don't care if they hate you. It's about publicity and press. How hard is it to understand that?
Well, the letter I got said that said basically, good God, Paris Hilton's barely out of her prison jammies, and now we have to talk about this. Please, can we talk about an issue or two? So I tried to start the show with some issues.
I hear you. I hear you. But, you know, the thing that really gets me is that nobody told Elizabeth. They were like, you know, all these people that you're complaining about in private, it's just theater, Elizabeth, and they just want you to react this way. And I don't think they gave her the. I think they were just too quiet on it. And we do need to have this discussion about shock provocateurs and what to do with them. There needs to be some kind of training on it, obviously.
Well, that's the one thing in mentioning all this. This was clearly dummied up, okay? Chris Matthews made it abundantly clear that this had been cleared in advance and that they were sort of dropping this on, you know, the guy with the long hair and the Adam's apple. They were dropping it on him as a surprise, as a shock, as a gotcha. You know, it's television as gotcha theater. This was reality TV.
Well, you have to understand that also Elizabeth Edwards was a willing participant in this. She jumped in the ring when this succubus, she is a shock provocateur. That's her job. That's what she gets paid for, her salary. How hard is it not to understand that? And now all she did was she rung up some numbers on her book, Godless, or whatever book.
She did, and guess what else happened?
David,
I don't want to be mean. I don't want to be perceived as being mean to Mrs. Edwards. I think she's a classy lady. I think John Edwards is a classy guy. If Dennis Kucinich wasn't running for president, I would be four square behind John Edwards, and I've still got a lot of respect for him. However, I don't think it was. I don't. No, 24 hours didn't pass before an email from the Edwards campaign started hitting email boxes, and the slug on it was, why did I stand up to, and I refuse to repeat that person's name.
Yeah, I hear you.
And so you open the email and it says, Dear blah blah, yesterday on Chris Matthews' program, I blah 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 with blah blah. Do you know why I did it? I did it because I love America and we've got to change the political discourse in this country. Can't you please give $10 to the Edwards campaign?
Yeah. You know, the thing that people have to understand about the whole Edwards thing now is that there's no hope in this damn campaign for Edwards. He just carried himself. His wife called in. And I mean, my God.
Well, see, that's what that thing said too. And I don't necessarily agree with that, David, but I do understand.
No, I mean with the public perception, you're not going to be able to control that.
They're already,
because we live in a man, like James Brown said, it's a man's world. For the most part, when you talk about perception, Bob, it's a man's world still.
Well, and the first thing that came to my mind was, look, if we're going to have a lesson on what it means to be Southern, let me add this one. When a man insults a man's wife, the spouse is entitled to go and beat the living bejesus out of the man who did it. So if John Edwards was to go and just gut stomp that guy, it would be completely acceptably within the realm of Southern conduct.
And, you know, just one more story before I go.
That was funnier when I first came up with it, David.
Well, one more story before I go is the case in Atlanta about the kid with the oral sex.
Yeah.
Did you hear the latest on that?
No.
They refused him a bond. They refused him bail. What kind of world did you have to be living in?
Yeah, okay, let's clear this up a little bit because it's a little bit inside baseball at this point.
Yeah.
It's a story from the state of Georgia. A young African-American man had 17 years old at the time, had oral sex with a 15-year-old girl. What they charge him with? Sexual predator or something like that,
molestation.
And gave him what, 10, 20 years?
Something like that.
And yeah, he's up and down people have been decrying this unjust response, and it was pure political theater manifested by a right wing white boy prosecutor who was out for votes. You know how it is. They're going to get our women's. And yeah, he was okay. So you're saying that he was denied parole? Jesus Christ!
See, Georgia has now just become Mississippi burning again.
God. Hey, David, we got to do the news. Thanks, man.
All right, later, Bob.
Later. And that's all we're going to talk about that person, okay? Now, coming up, our conversation with Eric Bollert. Between now and then, the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. It works better when you push the button in, Agnes.
Yeah, it really does.
It really, really does. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate keeps the immigration bill afloat despite assaults from both parties. A Republican proposal to send all adult illegal immigrants back home was defeated today. The amendment would have had illegals return home temporarily to qualify for permanent lawful status. Tomorrow is a critical test vote on the bill. The Senate Judiciary Committee has subpoenaed documents from the White House and Vice President Dick Cheney's office. It's part of a probe into the legality of the administration's warrantless domestic spying program. July 18th is the deadline for a response. Strong winds are making it difficult for firefighters to battle a huge wildfire burning near Lake Tahoe. More than 3,100 acres have burned since the fire broke out Sunday. 2,000 people have been evacuated. Near Austin, Texas, more than 18 inches of rain fell early today. People were stranded on rooftops and trees and in their cars waiting to be rescued by emergency personnel. The heavy rain and wind hampered some helicopter rescues. Oklahoma City's broken a 70-year record for the number of continuous rainy days, now at 15. Roads were closed around the state. Traffic problems and commuter travel delays resulted from a power outage in Manhattan this afternoon. Several subway lines were down. Authorities say a lightning strike may have been responsible. In Britain, Gordon Brown has taken over as prime minister. He promised a new government with new priorities. President Bush congratulated him with a phone call. Outgoing Prime Minister Tony Blair will become an envoy to the Mideast to promote peace between Israel and the Palestinians. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli attacks killed 12 Palestinians. Hamas forcefully seized control of the region 2 weeks ago, driving out rival Fatah forces. In Tehran, the government's surprise announcement of fuel rationing for private vehicles resulted in violence. Angry drivers torched 12 gas stations, threw rocks and smashed windows. Citizens were given only 2 hours' notice. They caused traffic jams as they sat in long lines in a rush to fill up before the deadline. China's state-run media reports the country started a crackdown on 180 food factories. Plants were closed after it was discovered that industrial chemicals were being used in many food products. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up after this.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
I just wonder why you think it's important to bank
in a local bank?
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but, of course, the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out and putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Today in Cairo, experts announced the identification of a female mummy as that of Hatshepsut, Egypt's most famous female ruler. The mummy was actually found in 1903, but was just ID'd through DNA. It's considered the biggest archaeological find since the discovery of King Tut's tomb in 1922. A United Nations report on the global population finds that by next year, 3.3 billion people, or more than half the world's population, will live in cities and towns. The shift to urban living will continue over the next couple of decades, especially in Africa and Asia. The Federal Reserve began its two-day meeting today to decide on key interest rates. Currently, the benchmark interest rate is 5.25%. At a campaign fundraiser for Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, billionaire investor Warren Buffett said Congress favors the rich. He slammed the U.S. tax system, using himself as an example. As the third richest person in the world, he said he's only taxed at 17.7%, while his receptionist tax rate is 30%. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $68.99 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 90 points at 13,427. The Nasdaq ended up 31 points, and the S&P closed up 13 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
8 past the hour. It has happened again. Every time I pre-promote a guest, Agnes is, here's some journalism speak for you. Agnes is efforting a response. Our correspondents on the Hill are efforting a response. Oh, what BS English. Yeah. Agnes is tracking our guest like a bloodhound, a beautiful red-headed bloodhound on the scent. Yeah, pit bull with lipstick. That's how she prefers to describe herself. It is Wednesday, and I've got to... See, I'm in a lurch right now because I don't know if we're going to hear from our guest. I don't know what's going to happen. I hate it when this goes on. It could be that Mr. Bulwark decided that it was no longer necessary to do the piece because, in fact, okay, here's the background. Agnes, play the thing, please, so we can make this right.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight. Very good. God is in his heaven and all is now right with the universe. There are some things that have to happen to make this show go, and that's one of them, at least on Wednesdays. No, just to give you an idea of what's going on, and this is a media story, and we do pay some attention to the media here because it matters. That's why they call their organization Media Matters for America, and their website's mediamatters.org. Let's see, it was our good friend Preston in Denver who has frequently used the term perception management. And, of course, perception management is all about what happens during and after a presidential debate. As you know or may not, there is a presidential debate to be hosted on PBS tomorrow evening, Thursday evening, the 28th of June. And what the beef was, what was really, really under the fingernails of the folks at Media Matters, was the fact that it had been previously publicized that Frank Luntz, for the love of God, Frank Luntz, the Republican pollster, the guy who plays with and sleazes up the English language like a pig in poop. Frank Luntz was slated to be on the coverage of the debate and on the Tavis Smiley show the following day, Friday. Well, why would you care? Let's see. February 24th, Saturday Magazine, Luntz is quoted as saying, quote, "America won't elect John Edwards president for the same reason we've never elected a used car salesman. America hates trial lawyers." Then there's CNBC's Kudlow and Company, where Luntz said of Edwards' decision at the time not to fire two controversial bloggers from his campaign. Remember, this is the blogging thing that got ginned up by that fat old doughy, pasty, pustle-gutted freak William Donahue. Oh, we've got him tonight, too. We're going to do a little backtracking. We all know the phrase, you are judged by the company you keep. If this is the company John Edwards wants to keep, he may win the Democratic primary process, but most assuredly he's not going to be the next president. Then talking about Senator Hillary Clinton, he says, in the language she uses, she holds up Saul Alinsky almost like an icon. I don't know how to say this, but that's like holding up some people from Germany in the 1930s or 40s. Jesus, and we get accused of playing the Nazi card. March 13th on Hannity and Combs, quote, "We've been analyzing Clinton over the past few weeks on your show, and she doesn't seem to pick up the fact that there's too much negativity, there's too much divisiveness." Luntz on October 31st, 2006 on Hannity and Combs, quote, "I always use the line for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, you get one shot at a facelift, if it doesn't work the first time, let it go." Then, it goes on and on. Media Matters has done a wonderful job of laying out every... basically, what PBS had done was to bring Frank Luntz in as a hatchet man for every single Democrat running for office. Ha! Huh. And you thought George Bush packing the board over at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting didn't really matter. Silly you. Silly us. So we were going to be talking about this. I'm wondering if Agnes would maybe try Mr. Bullard's office phone one more time, and then we'll let it go. Well, but anyway, he may not feel like it's necessary to do the interview anymore, because there has been some change. PBS contacted Media Matters saying that Republican pollster Frank Luntz will not be involved with the Thursday debate. They still plan to have him on for the analysis in a conversation with Tavis Smiley on Friday, June 28th. But they did write today, Neil Kendall, executive producer of Tavis Smiley, and the All-American Presidential Forums on PBS, moderated by Tavis Smiley. They wrote today to Media Matters saying, "The All-American Presidential Forum on PBS, moderated by Tavis Smiley, airing this Thursday, is an unprecedented watershed event for millions of yada, 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 yada. To correct some erroneous information, please note that Dr. Frank Luntz," Dr. Jesus, he couldn't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody, "is not appearing on Thursday night's Presidential Forum. He is the guest the following night, Friday, June 29th, on Tavis's regular late-night PBS program. He'll be joined by a focus group of 30 people." See, it's still evil. He's going to analyze a focus group, and what we're going to hear is that all Democrats suck. Because that is Frank Luntz's job. Frank Luntz is scum. This guy is even frequently sanctioned by his own peer group, because he plays fast and loose with what he calls facts. He plays dirty with his data. And among other things, he is, if you see Rudy Giuliani smile big enough, you can see Frank Luntz chuckling down in his throat. Luntz has been formally reprimanded by the American Association for Public Opinion Research. because he refused to release documentation in support of comments he made to the media regarding his polling work on the Republican Party's 1994 contract with America. National Council on Public Polls censured Luntz for allegedly mischaracterizing on MSNBC the results of focus groups he conducted during the 2000 Republican convention. It goes on and on and on. Let's see. Luntz not only helped write Republican House member Newt Gingrich's contract with America, he was all, you know, the contract on America. He was also responsible for its presentation to the public. He was an advisor in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. He rewrote the dirty language, teaching Republicans how to attack the idea that they're killing the planet. In a memo called The Environment, A Cleaner, Safer, Healthier America. Another memo, this guy's a real memo writer, communicating the principles of prevention and protection in the war on terror. He's the guy who invented, it's better to fight them there than have them follow us home and fight us here. That Frank Luntz. And he is still hooked up for the Tavis Smiley Show on Friday, June the 29th. What can you do? Well, you can contact PBS. You can tell them that we would like to have unbiased analysis of that focus group on Friday the 29th, and that a guy who's that who is that deep in Republican politics is not the guy to do it. The hell, James Zogby's chopped liver? John, James, some Zogby, chopped liver? The Harris Company's no good? I mean, there's a lot of public opinion research, but yeah. So that was the issue that we were going to have Eric Bollert on the program over. I don't know, we may yet hear from him. We may yet. In the absence, however, of Mr. Bollert's arrival, I would, since it is Wednesday and it is prayer meeting, I would like for Agnes to bring up some audio here, if she doesn't mind. We always ask nicely of Agnes. Now, I want... Okay, here's some background. This is... I want you to... I've got the entire clip here, and we will be pausing it periodically through the process. Because I'm not going to soundbite you. I'm going to let you hear the whole thing. I'll talk about it a little bit here and there. But I want you to hear the way all of this garbage plays out. This is a classic case of the media, or a medium. We tend to forget that media is a Latin plural, so it is better to say the media are than the media is. It's downright wrong to say the media is, the media are. A medium is, media are. Geek moment, sorry. Okay, backing up. I guess it was Friday that Robin Williams appeared on Jay Leno's program to promote his new movie, which I guess he plays some kind of priest because he had the little penguin collar on. So he makes a couple of, you know, Robin Williams ad-libs. And watching Robin Williams ad-lib is among the funniest things available to a human alive on the planet at this point, assuming they're English speaking. Shoot, some of his physical stuff is even funny if you don't speak English. So he makes a joke, an ad-lib joke, on Leno on Friday evening. By the time Monday has rolled around, NBC has begun working trying to create a fake controversy over it. Now, shall we go into the detailed inside baseball analysis of how that happened? Okay, here's how it happened. The joke happened on Leno, and immediately this fat, pasty, doughy, ignorant, bigoted, racist, homophobic, puzzle-gutted pile of crap named William Donahue calls up NBC and says, I got to get on there. That Robin Williams, he's a bigot. He's a Catholic hater. And everything that you're about to hear transpires. So this is a clip from the Today Show that embraces and includes the clip from Jay Leno. Sit back, relax, you're going to giggle, and then you're going to get disgusted. Roll it, Agnes.
It is a question a lot of people are asking. Why is it okay to make fun of some groups, but not others?
Pause.
Some are
Pause.
Simply off limits.
Pause. The foxing of NBC News. Did you hear that? It is a question that some people are asking. No, damn it. When you're doing journalism and you want to quote somebody, you say who said it. Who's asking the question? Tell the truth, NBC. Tell the truth. Say that fat, pasty, doughy, white guy, puzzle-gutted, piece of crap, bigoted, racist, homophobic jerk, William Donahue, called you up to try to gin up some FaceTime. At least be honest about it.
Find the priest, find the pedophile, find the priest, find the pedophile. There you go, right there.
On Monday, what may have been a joke...
Oh, you found the pedophile. Let's move him back into the game. Okay, find him.
Some say reveals a greater truth.
The one, the only, Robin Williams.
On NBC's Tonight Show with Jay Leno to promote his new movie...
Did he do the some people thing again? He did. That some people say reveals a greater truth. You know, if we were to dig up Edward R. Murrow, we would find that the sides of his grave are rubbed smooth and cylindrical from all the spinning the poor fella has to do.
License to wed.
Does that make it all right? No, it does not make it all right. It is still a sin.
The conservative website newsbusters.org called Williams' remarks anti-Catholic bigotry.
You have to realize if you're a Catholic priest, you've retired this. That's it. No more sex. Right. But then they're going to put you in a small, dark box, and people are going to come up and tell you their nastiest sexual stuff that they've done.
But in sharp contrast to the outrage ignited by Don Imus' racially charged remarks...
Our agenda is to try to be funny, and sometimes we go too far, and sometimes we go way too far.
Okay, or pause it. All right, analysis time. So far we've got two some peoples and one direct allegation. This ought to tell you something about the mainstream media and how sickening they are, how untrustworthy, how bought off, how con-jobbed they are. Who did they cite? Who did NBC News cite as a reference and a source for this phonied-up controversy? They cited newsbusters.org. Here, let me read you the little line underneath their header. Exposing and combating liberal media bias. There is no liberal media. See, I just violated my own rule. There are no liberal media. Well, yes, there are. We are a liberal medium. We are proud to say that we are a liberal medium. But there's, in the mainstream, whether it's NBC, CBS, ABC, CNBC, MSNBC, CNN, Fox, Bloomberg, God only knows, whatever else, there are no liberal media. The New York Times is not a liberal medium. The Washington Post is not a liberal medium. The New Orleans Times-Picayune is not a liberal medium. Okay? Chicago Tribune, not a liberal medium. None of it. There's no it's been all driven out because of this ginned up, phonied up business that any time you sit down and you try to tell the truth and you don't say, on the other hand, the right-wing religion industry phonies suggest that blah, 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 blah. Anytime that you don't give the right-wing religion industry, fascist, neo-Stalinist, neo-conservative Republicans the lead, it's liberal! Now, I'm looking at the front page of newsbusters.org. For God's sakes, don't go there. Don't help them make money. Don't help them sell ads. Okay? Please? I'm doing this for you. My eyes are burning. It's the bear I have to cross every day. Here's their lead right now. Mainstream media entrance exam 67. Global warming causes which of the following? A. Obese children. B. Poison ivy. C. Anything you don't like. D. All of the above. The implication being that if you would be a member of the mainstream media, you are hopelessly liberal and you would answer all of the above. Global warming causes anything you don't like. God, I hate these people. I loathe them. I detest them. I despise them. So, this is the source. Some little lazy-ass pseudo-video journalist at NBC went running off to Newsbusters to find out that they are the blatant example of anti-Catholic bigotry. When Robin Williams sat on the Jay Leno program and said, and pantomimed, ad-libbed, a game of three-card Monty that involves priests and pedophiles. Find the priest, find the pedophile, find the priest, find the pedophile. A blatant example of anti-Catholic bigotry. Go, Agnes.
Gay slur made by former Grey's Anatomy star Isaiah Washington.
No, I did not call TRF.
There has been little backlash.
Robin Williams is a comedian. The Catholic Church and the stories that have been coming out of it for many years, that one would expect that this is going to be a subject of open season.
Notice the slant. It's not like when Grey's Anatomy star, blah, blah, blah. It's not like Don Imus. There has been little backlash. Now, read into that what they want you to really think. There has been not enough backlash. Okay? Pick it up.
Other comedians have also made the Catholic Church a recent punchline.
The Vatican Labs have developed a sinalyzer. A young driver, say 16, 17 years old, just purses his lips round the hole and blows and blows and...
causing some to ask, is there a double standard?
Bill Donahue is the president of the Catholic...
Now, see, what did I tell you? They end the piece, and the first thing you get, David Gregory hosting, Bill Donahue is the head of the Catholic League, yada, 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 yada. Okay? This is why... anybody who pays attention understands that the mainstream media cannot be trusted anymore. Go ahead. Just listen to this, and you'll love it.
Steve Adubato is an MSNBC media analyst. Good morning to both of you. Bill, this is Robin Williams being Robin Williams, a lot of people would say. This is his humor across
would
all
say,
groups.
A lot of
what
people.
What bothered you about it?
Singling out priest in the same old lousy stereotype. I don't think he's a bigot, by the way. It's entirely possible to make a bigoted comment without being a bigot. I look at people who do it seriatim over
okay,
and over
wait,
and over
wait.
Again.
Wait. Finish it up. Who does it seriatim? Oh, he has to use his
like
Latin.
Like Rosie O'Donnell or Bill Maher.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, like Rosie O'Donnell or Bill Maher. Who's Bill Donahue? Now, he's complaining about bigots, right? It's possible to make a bigoted remark without being a bigot like Rosie O'Donnell or Bill Maher. Well, let's talk about Bill Donahue. The Catholic League that he heads is of course, an ultra-right-wing fringe group. And being an ultra-right-wing neo-fascist, Bill Donahue's a great pal of Benny the Rat, the guy with the pointy hat and the red shoes and the robes and the magic chair. Yeah. Let's go to Bill Donahue's words. Gonna love this. This is a quote. He said this on MSNBC on December the 9th, 2004. It's sourced. Hollywood is controlled by secular Jews who hate Christianity in general and Catholicism in particular. It's not a secret, okay? And I'm not afraid to say that. That's why they hate... he was talking about The Passion of the Christ. That's why they hate this movie. It's about Jesus Christ, and it's about truth. It's about the Messiah. Hollywood likes anal sex. Wow, what kind of drugs do you have to be on to go from Hollywood's controlled by Jews, Jews hate Christians, Hollywood... Mother! It's about the Messiah. Hollywood likes anal sex. You know, we try not to take our kids to any of those godless Disney movies unless they have anal sex in them. You know, there's a little anal sex in everything that comes out of Hollywood. How they worked it into March of the Penguins, I will never know, but they did. It was probably that 5-foot-tall prehistoric penguin. It's been all over the news. That's Bill Donahue. That's your Bill Donahue. Great guy, that Bill. Hollywood. Hollywood Jews like anal sex and hate Christians. Okay, so let's go on and hear dear Bill explain what it means to be a bigot.
Nonetheless, he should be held accountable. I don't want him fired. My name is Nat Al Sharpton.
Wait, stop. See, we're going to have a hell of a hard time getting through this. I don't want him fired. I'm not Al Sharpton. However, 2 months ago, I did call for the beheading of a sculptor who had made a chocolate Jesus. He did, you know. The guy had to hide, like Salman Rushdie had to hide from the fundamentalist Muslims. He had to hide from the freaks who follow Bill Donahue. But I'm not Al Sharpton.
Simply saying this, you know, they say there's dirty laundry in the Catholic Church. You bet there is. Do you want to go down the rest of the list? Should we start with Muslims?
Dirty laundry? Place
how
dresses?
Come? How come wait, you can't wait, even show an inoffensive depiction of Muhammad on TV because we might offend them, or are we scared to death of them? One or the other.
Wait! We can't. Okay, so he has to go immediately after the Muslims? Now this guy was leading rioting in the streets of New York City over a chocolate statue of Jesus, and he's having a hissy about how Muslims respond. Yeah, I don't know who the executive producer of the Today Show is. I don't know why this person has a job. I know lots of virtually any listener to this program could do the job of the executive producer of the Today Show if this is the best they can do. I'm not Al Sharpton. The Muslims! It's about the Muslims! We have dirty laundry in the Catholic Church. You know, there's a lot of dirty lace dresses with sticky stains on them. The occasional Snickers bar stain. We have lots of dirty laundry in the Catholic Church. Go on.
I know so many good priests, 42,000 in this country. I know a lot of them. They're good men, and their morale is in the toilet.
Oh, he didn't say that. Yes, he did. There's a lot of good priests, and their morale is in the toilet. Oh, Dr. Freud, Roman courtesy phone, Dr. Freud, Roman courtesy phone.
Afraid to go into a restaurant with their collar on because people are looking at them as if they're a molester. It's a bunch of bull. I think.
No, it's not a bunch of bull, Bill. They're afraid to cite it for us. Tell us, why didn't you get that priest on the program to say that he's afraid to go into a restaurant with his collar on because everybody looks at him like a dirty little boy buggerer? Because they don't exist! Bill Donahue, you fat, bigoted, hateful, pussel-gutted, jerk-off freak! They don't exist! And you and your persecution complex. Lord God, you could put an entire family of psychiatrists through Harvard Medical School just laying on the couch and talking to their daddy. You and your... Oh, gee, they're out there. Oh, they don't like the Christians. The Christians only control 80% of the country, and we're being persecuted.
Guys want to just treat us as if we were Native Americans, and you never hear from me.
Steve, you're...
What? Stop! They should just treat us as Native Americans, and you'd never hear from me? Hey, Bill, give me the address. I'll mail you some blankets laced with smallpox. How's that for treating you like the Native Americans? That's what your ancestors did, Whitey.
This offend you, hearing that kind of humor by Williams or by others?
Mike, millions of others are struggling Catholic, trying to do the right thing, Dave, but I'll say this. I respect and appreciate Bill's point. Yes, Catholics are a target to some extent. This is the wrong guy to be targeting because I don't see what's so offensive about it. What's more offensive to me, Bill, is that for decades, our church not only swept this under the rug while little boys were being molested by priests, they made out-of-court settlements, you know it and I know it, and then transferred these priests to other parishes where they could do that to other kids. And the deal was with the people that they molested, they had to shut their mouths, the victims. That's what bothers me. Our church, on some level, because of the way the hierarchy has failed, you know it and I know it, we deserve some of this. The church deserves some of this, and we're feeling the pain, and that's what bothers me more.
But that's the question, Bill, is whether this is about one's Catholicness or about a particular scandal that has gone on for years and the church's reaction to it. You're saying it's going beyond that.
Well, what I'm saying is this. If Robin Williams or somebody else made a joke about a particular cardinal, we know one of them, Cardinal Law, all right?
Right.
Who disgraced the Catholic Church. And if they went after a particular priest, like Paul Shanley, that monster who's in prison, I'm all on
their
side.
Wait. Where's Bernard Law? Hey, Bill Donahue, where's Bernard Law? Bernard Law's not in prison. You pedophilia enabler, you. Bernard Law was quietly shuffled off in the dark and still of the night to go and work in a Vatican office where he is beyond the reach of extradition. He might as well be in Brazil. No, he's better off. He's in the Vatican, and no prosecutor, no little buggered boy who is now a buggered adult who had his entire childhood ripped from him because of the connivance of Bernard Law can ever have justice against that sick freak. Because, Bill Donahue, he's hanging out with your buddy, Benny the Rat. It's just the truth. Oh, Bob's being anti-Catholic. No, I'm not. I don't care. I don't care what you believe. I don't care what anybody believes. Under the First Amendment to the Constitution of this country, you are entitled to believe whatever you wish to believe. Wishes and believing, they go together. They're the same damn thing. Okay? I got nothing in that. But when you want to walk around and you control vast tracts of power inside the federal and state governments of this nation, and you want to crawl around hollering and weeping and beating your chest and wearing sackcloth and ashes and complaining that you're being persecuted, I absolutely have a First Amendment right to turn around and call BS on you, Bill Donahue. God almighty. Oh, he won't defend Bernard Law. No, he doesn't have to, because Bernard Law was removed from the reach of the law, of even the long arm of justice, and he is still being enabled and coddled in the loving, warm bosom of the papacy. It's just the truth. Go on.
By the way, go get them, because these people are lousy, they've disgraced the Catholic Church. But when you make a sweeping condemnation of priests as pedophiles, and yet every other segment of the population, look what happened, Michael Richards, Mel Gibson, Don Imus, Isaiah Washington, we have one standard for blacks, gays, and Jews, we have another segment, a standard for Catholics.
Hold on, wait a minute, did you hear that? Hey, Peter Godbold, you out there? Did you hear that? We have one standard for blacks, gays, Muslims, and Jews, and a different standard for priests? Funny, I haven't heard about any priests being beaten to death and crucified on a barbed wire fence outside Laramie, Wyoming. I haven't heard any stories about priests being dragged to death behind pickup trucks in Texas. I haven't heard any stories about priests hanging as the strange, low-hanging fruit of sick, demented trees in the deep south. I haven't seen any stories of Catholic priests being hauled up from the bottom of Mississippi rivers wrapped in cotton gin fan chains. No, Bill Donahue, I haven't heard anything like that. But I've heard about it happening to gay people. I've heard it happening to women. I've heard about it happening to people of African-American extraction. I've heard about it happening to Jews. But I've never heard of it happening to a priest, and yet yours, you say, is the one that is subjected to a higher standard. Not hardly. Now the other guy's going to come in and call him down a little bit. Here we go.
sick.
Bill, we're talking about, when you talk about IMUS, and that's a whole can of worms you don't want to get into, but the fact is, well, I'll tell you why, because what IMUS did and why it's apples and oranges, IMUS goes after 18-year-old basketball players
gem.
At Rutgers University who played for the national championship who happened to be black. He was more than wrong. And that's why this is actually legitimate on some level. It is social,
oh, so
political commentary. No, and you know, and I know that that's not true, but...
What did he do?
Most of... You think most Americans think that Robin Williams is making a legitimate point? He's poking fun at the fact that the hierarchy failed, and on some level...
I didn't get that.
You think that he was being serious?
If he was to go after Father Murphy, who's a molester, go get him. But when you make these sweeping condemnations and you don't do it with any other group, there's something really sick about it.
But part of the point is where IMUS got in trouble is that he went after a group that was so clearly innocent,
clearly
beyond the pale. Right. And I'm not making a judgment about whether IMUS should have been fired or not. That's a whole separate debate. In this case, it seems to be more commentary and satirical commentary about not only the act by priests, but the culture within the church that for too long, by most people's estimation, condoned the behavior or covered up the behavior. Yeah. So is that legitimate?
I think
it's where does it go beyond that point?
I think you can make some fun of it. Look, some of these priests and bishops have made my job near impossible. Mm-hmm. All right?
What is your job, Bill?
I will never defend the indefensible. On the other hand, most priests are good guys, and we're painting them with a big, broad brush. We wouldn't do that with any other segment of the population.
Issue, Bill.
Oh, yes, it
no,
is.
Bill,
that's
Bill,
exactly
Bill,
the
let
issue.
Me tell you something. We talked about this in the green room.
Right.
Anytime in our church, and I criticized the church for their failure to deal with this, I was called as a Catholic, someone who hated my own religion, and a Catholic basher. My point is, our church is so sensitive to criticism, they won't even take your criticism, and you're a close friend advocate.
But the question is, are they easy marks in a way that society generally is not going to come down on that kind of anti-Christian humor?
Yes, and that's because Catholics are totally separate, and we fight over the issue of abortion and whether women should become priests. We're not as together as other groups, and that's
all
the other part of the equation.
We're going to have to leave it there, the debate to be continued. Bill Donahue, Steve Abbott, thank you.
The debate to be continued. In other words, we will keep hammering on this until we gin up a phony controversy to try to drum up some ratings. Now, am I equally guilty because I just played that for you? Am I trying to gin up controversy? No. No, I'm trying to point out here the way that these sick, psychopathic right-wing organizations like the Catholic League, like Bill Donahue, feign persecution, feign injury. These pedophile priests make my job just damn near impossible. Again, what's your job, Bill? Is it your job to cover up? You know, this isn't one of those Vatican II Roman Catholics, Bill Donahue. Bill Donahue's a weirdo like Mel Gibson's a weirdo. You know, real Opus Dei sicko. And Bill Donahue, you see, he doesn't believe women should be allowed into the priesthood. He doesn't believe that priests should be allowed to do what they are. You know, how is it that with right-wing Catholic freaks like Bill Donahue, how is it that marriage is the perfect union between one man and one woman, and yet if that one man is a Catholic priest, it's unnatural? What's unnatural is what the Catholic Church has done to its priesthood. Okay? Just, you know, I do this for the sake of sort of a heads up, a keep your eye out. Watch this stuff with a very jaundiced eye. Pay attention to it. Again, I don't care if you're Roman Catholic, Eastern or Orthodox, Armenian Orthodox, Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, Lutheran. I simply don't care. It does not matter in my existence. Buddhist, Hindu, Jew, Muslim, Jainist, Animist, Wiccan, I don't care. As far as I'm concerned, you are free to believe any made-up BS that you want to. Okay? It's like John Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night. But you do not have a right to sit around and say that you're being persecuted because other people don't want to believe your made-up BS. You are free to believe that when you eat a little really flavorless cracker, that it turns into bloody Jesus meat in your belly if you want to. None of my business. You are free to believe that your world is controlled by the elephant son of, come on, who was it? Kali and Shiva. Hey, Ganesh, you want a peanut? Please do not offer my god a peanut. You are free to believe whatever you wish. And I am not, I'm not going to sit here and say that whatever made-up stuff you want to believe is not true. It may be true for you. It may work for you. If it makes you a better person, then it is to the better for it having done so. Although I do tend to adhere to that great old saying, I think it was Bob Lottie in the chat room who brought it up. Under normal circumstances, good people will do good things, and evil people will do evil things, but it takes religion for good people to do evil things. I adhere to that very closely. So please don't mistake that this is some sort of an attack on Roman Catholics or Baptists. No. I am attacking the evil that they do. I would attack them for the evil were they doing evil as Muslims, and God knows there are millions who do. I would attack the evil done by people who are Jewish, and there's plenty of evil done by them. What, a 12-year-old Palestinian boy was murdered in the last 24 hours by the Israeli Defense Forces. And that 12-year-old Palestinian boy had as much a right to life as anybody on the planet. To hell with all of them, I say, if you're going to do evil, this is not about what you choose to believe. I can think it's funny, I can think it's silly. But that's my right. But you do not have a right to run around. William Donahue does not have a right to run around and try to alter the body politic based on his sick, psychotic perceptions of persecution. Are we clear? Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Susan is calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How's it going?
Well, I lost my temper.
You know, I lose mine, and sometimes I find it, and I wish I hadn't.
Well, when you started talking, well, yeah, it was the whole thing with this bit, and then you mentioned being persecuted. I immediately flashed onto the auto da fe.
Sure.
And for those who aren't into history, a lot of my people burned up in those, and they didn't just, and a lot of Jews burned up, and they didn't just burn.
And Native Americans burned up.
Children.
Yeah, indiscriminately. And they did so because they said the Bible told them to. Remember, the reason they used burning was because they said they were forbidden by the Bible from shedding blood, so if they burned them, they didn't shed blood. That's
right.
The twisted logic that you get out of the old Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, and pregnant women, and it didn't make any difference. They all went to the flames, and they went in alive. And so you... Oh.
Well, now, wait. If you were lucky,
they throttled you through.
If you recanted, you got garroted first, and then they burned you.
But most of them weren't, and especially if they were Jewish, and so you went in alive, and, oh, God, and...
Well, look, I mean, there were so many people killed. I've made this... I'd love to see somebody... with the anthropological and statistical creds go after this. I think it would be a fascinating study. There were so many millions of people, what was it, 15 million people murdered outright by the Roman Catholic Church during the Middle Ages. There were so many people murdered by the Roman Catholic Church, Susan, that there is a strong likelihood that every single person alive today in the United States of America
is related to at least one of them.
Is related to at least one person who was murdered by the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah. And I'm probably, you know, I'm not a genetic witch, but there are genetic witches who are related to many of them. And That's why most...
No, you're a Scot, okay? You're a Scot. I'm a Scot. We got pressed, stoned, burnt... Hung.
Witches. Yeah, hung as witches.
Hanged. Sorry, my bad. Grammar moment.
The they were burning witches in Scotland as late as the 1700s.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just... But as far as this Catholic dude, what I saw that as was...
Hollywood is controlled by secular Jews who hate Christianity. Course. Hollywood likes anal sex.
Yeah,
enough
right.
said on Bill Donahue.
Yeah,
and
it
yet,
sounds like Bill Donahue has some serious sexuality.
And yet, without mentioning that guy's name who was on Chris Matthews' show yesterday...
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing, okay?
Yeah. Well,
anytime they want to talk about Roman Catholicism, Bill Donahue has made himself the go-to guy.
Yeah, to me, what this is Robin Williams is skewering pedophiles who, by their very nature, deserve all the skewering they can get. And as far as Catholic Church, the society that allowed them to get away with it, they deserve it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Cardinal Law was taken out of the reach of American jurisprudence.
And if you can't get him physically, get him this way. Skewer him. Make fun of him. Make him a laughingstock. Humor does it sometimes when the legal system can't.
Yeah. And frankly, I'll just say it plainly. Would I leave my children in the care of a Roman Catholic priest? Not on your life.
But, I wouldn't either.
But let's balance that. Let's balance that. Would I leave my children in the care of a Baptist minister? Not on your life.
Your life.
I will not leave my children in the care of the religion industry because they poison people.
Exactly.
Even if they don't rape or bugger my children, they will do it to their brains.
Yes, exactly. They're either going to bugger their bodies or they're going to bugger their minds. And sometimes I think it's their minds that is the worst crime.
There's a video out there. If anybody cares to look for it on YouTube, you're welcome to. I think Gene sent us the link from Feringula. It is to the tune of We Are the World. It is the Freaks from Westboro Baptist singing God Hates the World. In fact, Agnes, it's stored in the links under Fred Phelps and the Phelps Tones. It's in my music. We'll play that here in a minute. I know, but yeah,
there's going to be a special, if there is a hell, and I don't really believe there is one, but for those people that believe in hell, there has to be a special place for these people.
Yeah. Yeah, and please bear in mind what I was about to say about the video, if people care to go and watch it. At the end of this thing, after this whole chorus of Westboro Baptist freaks... There is a shot of a single little baby, barely speaking. I'd say maybe 18, 20 months old. And she is singing, God hates the world. God hates the humans. I'll tell you what, Susan, just for the heck of it. No, we'll go out with this. We'll go out. I won't subject you to
there
it directly.
One thing I,
yeah,
there
go
is
ahead.
One thing I do want to mention. Okay, I don't like... right-wingers. I don't like their works. But I was cruising my space, and I ran across something, and it's a reaction to dear old Fred and his crony. And it's this right-wing group, and what they do is they show up at military funerals when they know Fred Phelps is going to show up. And they show up with these giant flags. And a whole bunch of people, each with a flag, line the route so between them, the funeral,
yeah,
and Fred Phelps to keep to block the view of the funeral from Phelps so the family can't see it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And it's the right thing to do. Rather than stifling speech, because you know how I feel about the First Amendment.
They don't say a word. They just stand there with these flags waving in the breeze.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it's wonderful. And that's one of the few nice things I'm going to say about a right-wing group.
Well, but they're not all right-wingers. I mean, yeah, predominantly, I guess. But it's people doing
this group is.
Oh, really? It's people doing the right thing.
Yeah, they were doing the right thing for the right reason. They don't want these people bothered.
Exactly.
And that was wonderful.
Yeah.
And
the Harley riders who drown them out with their loud pipes, love them.
Yeah.
Just love them.
I love them to death. Anything to get rid of these freaks.
I know. Thanks, Susan. You have a great evening, okay?
You have a nice day.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Quick email from our good pal, Cindy, in the Great Northwest. She says, I lived in the South Bay just outside of Hollywood all my life, and that is an industry town where movie making is a big job generator. Still, when I raised my kids there, my motherly order of the day was no Disney films. We went to Disneyland regularly for family entertainment, but my kids grew up without the anti-dog, anti-animal, pro-royalty views of Disney. They're a pack of right-wing, religious zealot-type fascists at Disney, and always have been. Most of their employees belong to the Crystal Cathedral because it feels so chichi-poo-poo to attend such a blaring example of materialism and mind control. Well, there's one for the vocabulary. Thanks, Cindy. I think chichi-poo-poo will be making an appearance in the program. Love that. Just love you guys. So we're going to go out. You're going to hate this. You're just going to hate this. I'm kind of hoping USA for Africa will sue the ass off Fred Phelps for, hey, where's the RIAA when you need it? This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You've come together as one. See your soldiers dying, for you claim God's blessing you. That lie, the greatest lie of all.
You can't go on pretending day by day that the God of judgment is dead and gone.
You are all a part of the devil's family, and the truth, you're all headed straight to hell. God hates the world and all their people. You, everyone, face a fiery day for your proud city.
You'll notice that paternal God hates the world and her people. There's more levels of evil operating here than you can shake Dick Cheney at.
change his mind. You lived out your vain lives, storing up God's wrath for all eternity. God hates the world. Change his mind. You lived out your vain lives, storing up God's wrath for all eternity. You'll eat your kids.
Yeah, you'll eat them.
You hateful people.
Jesus coming.
You, everyone, face a fiery day for your proud sinning.
We're all sinners.
It's too late to change his mind.
Wait
God
for it.
Hates
here you.
The world and other people. You everyone say fire day for your proud city. It's too late to change your mind. You live in truly life. Story not grow up for eternity.
Is the Quality News Network. The resuscitated immigration bill has survived another day on the Senate floor. Lawmakers voted down several amendments that would have changed key components of the proposal. The legislation faces a critical test vote tomorrow. 60 votes are needed to keep the measure afloat. The Senate Judiciary Committee has subpoenaed documents from the White House and Vice President Dick Cheney's office. It's part of the probe into the legality of the administration's warrantless domestic spying program. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has toured the South Lake Tahoe forest fire devastation. He says aggressive restoration plans will be implemented to bring the area back to its pristine pre-fire conditions. 1,900 firefighters are struggling against dry weather and winds to battle that blaze. Containment could come Tuesday night. Near Austin, Texas, more than 18 inches of rain fell early today. People were stranded on rooftops, in trees, and in their cars waiting to be rescued by emergency personnel. The heavy rain and wind hampered some helicopter rescues. Oklahoma has had 15 consecutive days of rain, breaking a 1937 record. Traffic problems and commuter travel delays resulted from a power outage in Manhattan this afternoon. Several subway lines were down. Authorities say a lightning strike may have been responsible. New York Times poll finds that young Americans aged 17 to 29 are leaning to the left politically. They tend to be more likely to favor a government-run health care system and the legalization of gay marriage. In Britain, Gordon Brown has taken over as Prime Minister. He promised a new government with new priorities. Outgoing Prime Minister Tony Blair will become an envoy to the Mideast to promote peace between Israel and the Palestinians. In Baghdad, a bombing near a Shiite shrine killed 14, while another 60 Iraqis were killed or found dead around Baghdad. Top U.S. diplomat in Iraq has said he's hopeful that factions could make some legislative progress in the government there by September. So far, benchmark bills have not made it through the cabinet or the parliament. In Tehran, the government's surprise announcement of fuel rationing for private vehicles resulted in violence. Angry drivers torched 12 gas stations. And fashion designer Liz Claiborne has died in New York at age 78. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In Cairo, experts announced the identification of a female mummy as that of Hatshepsut, Egypt's most famous female ruler. The mummy was actually found in 1903, but was just ID'd through DNA. It's considered the biggest archaeological find since the discovery of King Tut's tomb in 1922. The Federal Reserve began its two-day meeting today to decide on key interest rates. Currently, the benchmark interest rate is 5.25%. Now, at a campaign fundraiser for Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, billionaire investor Warren Buffett said Congress favors the rich. He slammed the U.S. tax system, using himself as an example. As the third richest person in the world, he said, he's only taxed at 17.7%, while his receptionist tax rate is 30%. Venezuela will soon succeed in nationalizing its oil business as four foreign companies sign deals with the government, giving them the lion's share of profits. Two U.S. companies did not sign and will leave the region. Light Sweet Crude is currently trading at $68.99 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. The close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 90 points at 13,427. The NASDAQ ended up 31 points, and the S&P closed up 13. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, so tell me. You heard the little toddler, really not that much older than our little Liza, singing God Hates the World and All Her People. You parents out there, how do you get a child to sing words as evil as that? Well, first of all, the child has not been exposed to evil yet, or doesn't know that the child doesn't know that she's living in the very midst of evil. And every time she got close, she got a pat on the head. But see, these are freaks. These are really, if you go to, say, Wikipedia and you read the bio on Fred Phelps, you'll find out how truly evil and violent these people are. I'm pretty certain when I say that there's a strong likelihood that that child was taught to sing that song by having violence done against her. And you just wish that out there in Kansas somewhere there was a children and family services worker with enough guts to stand up to those bloody-handed punks. See, really, the Westboro Baptist Church, and I remind you that to this date, the Southern Baptist Convention has still not rescinded the ordination of Fred Phelps. This is the price we pay for the First Amendment. And the sad fact of the matter is, at this point in time, after what we saw in the Senate yesterday, and what we saw come from the Supreme Court a couple of days ago, it is, I say with absolute certainty, that the First Amendment is pretty nearly dead. Second Amendment, alive and well. First Amendment, coughing up blood on the porch. The First Amendment in this country is no longer anything but a sad, sick shell and a life support system for a tax-exempt, tax-free religion industry that does nothing but delude the American people. and foster hate. Just remember, Westboro Baptist Church, tax exempt. Every dollar comes in, nothing comes out. It serves no public good whatsoever. And the third rail of American politics is for all intents and purposes, a matter of looking up and saying, we need to tax the religious institutions. Because we do need to. It's only fair. Let's go to the phones. Alan is calling from Alabama. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, hanging in there after listening to what I listened to. You know, what you played from.
Yeah, I mean, let's be fair. I've heard it two or three times, so it's only fair that you guys get to hear it once.
Yeah, that's all I need to hear. Once is enough. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, evil.
Yeah, what I like to say about it is these people, and it's actually just, it seems like it's Christianity in general, it seems like they just reject life.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Like the world is a sinful place and we need to reject it because the God's coming so we can just destroy the earth and everybody's sinful. That seems like just a sickening way of looking at life.
Please remember, Alan, that in the doctrine of these weird right-wing fundamentalists, Satan is the prince of this earth. So we're all living in Satan's kingdom. That's the way they view our existence. And it's also, well, these people make no sense at all. They're telling people, on the one hand, they say, you're already damned. There's nothing you can do about it. But stop sinning. Why? We're already damned.
Yeah, sir.
You know, gather ye rosebuds while you may.
Yeah, they call it original sin, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also, I like this. This issue makes me think of the story of Parsifal. He's out looking for the Holy Grail. He's all disillusioned because he's been searching for so long. He goes to a hermit, and a hermit says, "Let's sit down and pray." And he says to the hermit, he says, "I hate God." You know, it's supposed to be in that story. If you read it, it says. The hermit says back to them in a different kind of way or symbolic way that if you hate God, you hate yourself. So if these people reject the world, they're actually rejecting their own selves. If they reject life, they hate themselves.
I think there's very little question of the truth of that. These people, well, I mean, if you want to get right down to it, these people are Satanists. They worship evil. Anyone who is that full of hate and describes their God as being a God of hate is talking about the old demiurge referenced in Gnostic thinking. You know, the Gnostics said, you know, this guy that you think is God, he's really not. He's really a devil. And that's one of the things that got them into trouble with the early Roman Catholic Church. The demiurge. These people are worshiping the demiurge. These people are worshiping the spirit of hatred.
Yeah, I think that in the Roman religion, which the devil came from, I don't even think in the Roman religion they thought of the devil as all that bad. They associate him with Poseidon, I do believe.
Well, you know, it's hard to tell exactly what everything is because it's the early church created this mishmash in order to make it comprehensible to their sheeple. They created this mishmash of Greco-Roman myth, Eastern myth, Egyptian myth. So you know, Hades, the god of the Greek underworld, whence went the dead souls. He wasn't a devil. He was just, you know, that was his job. That he was the god who was in charge of what happened to souls after they died.
Yeah, I guess it's symbolic for our lives. We all have a shadow side and a light side, according to Carl Jung.
Yeah, yin, or you know, go a little further east, and we'll talk about yin and yang.
Yeah.
And the harmonies and the balance therein, sure.
Yeah, back when I was like a Christian, I was talking to a Jewish fella, and he told me something that really shocked me. He said, in what we call the Old Testament, there's no mention of a hell. And I believe he's right.
Well, the Sheol
as I understand it, was a physical place outside the walls of Jerusalem where the bodies of the poor were dumped and the refuse was thrown.
Yeah.
And because it all piled up in the hot weather, it was prone to igniting from the gases that were released from the putrefaction and the rotting. Same thing happened outside the gates of Rome.
Yes, so the word hell goes back, I think it goes to Sheol, which means grave, right?
Sheol, S-H-E-O-L, was literally that place where the bodies were dumped.
Yeah.
Unburied, and the city's refuse as well.
Yeah.
And out of that comes the concept of hell, mixed up with a little bit of Hades. And the Egyptian afterlife, it's worth remembering that the concept of an afterlife and a soul is largely the responsibility of the Egyptians. And it was the Egyptians who gave us the little boy born of a virgin who died and was resurrected. The Sumerians and the Akkadians were responsible for most of the creation myth and the Noah story.
And it all
gets sort of the really old stuff gets sort of polyglottized and gathered together in the earliest versions of the Old Testament. I've read in some places that it was first compiled during the Babylonian exile of the Hebrew people, where they first came into contact with these ancient stories. Because their culture was not anywhere near as old as the Sumerians or the Akkadians.
And also, I guess you call them the Hebrews. They were nomadic people, and they went around taking over other people's land.
Well, if you try to map out some of the references in the early parts of the Old Testament, Abram, who later becomes Abraham, Abram was a son of the city of Ur. And Ur was one of the great commercial centers of Mesopotamia, about as far as you can get from what is modern Israel and still be in anything remotely considered to be the Middle East.
Yeah.
And that's why some of these fundamentalists, there's Muslim fundamentalists and Hebrew fundamentalists and Christian fundamentalists. A lot of the Jewish and Christian fundamentalists see the natural extent of the state of Israel extending all the way to the Persian Gulf. And if that doesn't make you want to run around the yard screaming at the prospect of the bloodshed needed to bring that off, well, you're not paying attention. Of course, you are, Alan.
Oh, wow. That sounds pretty dangerous.
It is dangerous.
Yeah, I think we need more discussion in our society about religion.
We're trying to do that, but everybody, I get, every now and then I get one of these little emails from somebody, Alan, saying, you hate the Catholics, or you hate the, fill in the blanks. No, I don't hate any of them. I do reserve the right to look some of them squarely in the eye and tell them they're crazier than a sprayed roach, though.
Yeah.
Because when you engage in a religion that practices evil and hatred, you've lost all my, you have no call upon me for either my respect or any level of deference.
Yeah, they just burn people's stake just for asking questions.
Precisely.
Yeah. It's kind of like what they ought to get in their heads is religion is for symbolism, not something to take literally, I don't think.
Well, none of it works. None of it works on an institutional level. It's all crap. Okay? It only works if it's inside your if it's a system whereby you sort out what is right and what is wrong and what is good and what is bad and what will make your stay on this planet more meaningful and filled with goodness and light for yourself and for others. Then it can do some good. But if it's just somewhere that you go on Sunday morning or Saturday night or whatever, it's a dead thing.
Yeah, you got to work it out for yourself, and then you got to. And find out how important your life works with other people, and you got to be able to work with other people in this world. Your religion's not just there's other people, they have their beliefs.
Sure. And you know, some of these people try to work on an interfaith basis. Every now and then, you'll see these conferences of, you know, a Catholic priest here and a rabbi there and a Muslim imam and whatever you call the Hindu guy or the Jainist, and they'll all sit down and they're reasonable people, and they'll come out and go, hey, look, we figured it out. It's all about being decent and making your miserable life a little less so. But the particular adherents of their faith largely refuse to hear that because that's too much work. Actually sitting around and examining your life is hard work.
Yeah, that's one thing about Buddhism. It seems like it's really a lot of that. It seems like, particularly, I think, with Zen Buddhism, it looks like it's often a study in modern psychology.
Exactly, and in some ways, Buddhism and particularly Zen is the hardest there is, because you have to sort through so many layers illusion.
Yeah, with Christianity, you're saved, and yeah. That's it.
Got my cracker, good to go.
Yeah, hey, we're talking about religion, and earlier you were talking about pollution, and here's something that mixes it both together: is the You've heard of what happened to Easter Island?
What? Which?
So, anthropologists figured out that they had some kind of religion there one time.
Oh, yeah, and they deforested themselves.
Yeah. So it's just that's a good example of what could happen to the whole world from these crazy religions.
Exactly. And there's a wonderful book out there by a guy named Jared Diamond, Alan. It's several years old now. It's called God, Germs, and Steel. And I believe the follow-up to it is either Collapse or Apocalypse or something like that, in which he examines the interaction of all of these things that cause cultures to collapse. And invariably, there's almost always a religious element to it and a dogmatic adherence to religion. Next thing you know, you're a former civilization.
Yeah, religion, nothing but control, just like fascism.
In many ways, you're absolutely correct.
Hey, I sent you another photo of that billboard.
Yeah, I saw the first one. I haven't seen the second one yet.
Yeah, it's much better and bigger, but that's an interesting photo, isn't it?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, and folks need to know, it's a bunch of windmills in the background, and in front of it, a sign that says, coal, the green energy source. Jesus, if there were any truth in advertising laws in this country, that wouldn't be allowed to be out there.
And probably somehow we probably would pay for that billboard.
Oh, yeah, directly or indirectly, you already have, sure.
Yeah, just like these billboards with religious signs I see all over the country through the faith base of this initiative.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, Alan, it's always a pleasure. Anytime, my friend, anytime. And keep driving safely, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Like I said, Alan's a heck of a painter, too. I don't know, maybe if he'll let us, we should post a couple of just examples of his work on the website, let you see it. Gorgeous stuff. Onward to our good friend Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey. I was just got to tune that thing on. I was sitting there listening to Alan, and, you know, he's so right on so many things. But I have a little book in my hand right now. It's called The Cathars. And it's by a gentleman by the name of Sean Martin, or Saint, or
Sean
Martin.
S-E-A-N, Sean.
S-E-A-N Martin.
Yeah, yeah. Sean.
And it was published in 2006. So it's a recent book. I picked it up at the library here, and I've been studying this book. And when you hit the early part, they were talking about the Catholic Church and what has been done in the name of their deity or their supposed deity, and what they've done to themselves and what they've done to others, and the very least of the sins of the Catholic Church are the buggering of little boys. Because when you go into this and you start studying it, not just reading it, Bob, I've been studying this book. It has so much truth in it. And if you're looking for the truth and it's referenced, then you can go and you can look in Scripture and you can go anywhere that you want to find these facts that are being placed before us. But these people, these Cathars or Catharism, was the most successful heresy of the Middle Ages, flourishing principally in
Languedoc,
okay, and Italy. And the Cathars taught that the world is evil, that must be transcended through a simple life, Bob, a simple life of prayer, work, fasting, and non-violence.
Mm-hmm.
And they believed themselves to be the heirs of the true heritage of Christianity going back to...
They were largely a Gnostic faith.
The apostolic times, when the apostles were on the earth, they believed they came from that time, and that was their belief, but they were very simple, and they were very, not self-aggrandizing like these Catholics are. Okay, they don't build big cathedrals. They used to meet in barns and in homes and in fields, but they didn't meet and they just didn't do those things. They didn't have anything except the word. Okay, and if you're okay, I'm not knocking religion, and I'm not knocking people like yourself or myself that says I don't accept any of that garbage. I don't believe, and I cannot accept something that I cannot lay my hands on and say, okay, Bob Kincaid is for real. I can talk to him. I can pick up a phone and call him and say, hey, Bob, how the heck you doing? I can't call God because he never answers. I mean, G-O-D on the phone, there's no number for him. I've looked it up in the book. It ain't there.
Yep.
And see, that's the thing. He's not real. It's something that they have conjured up in their twisted little world, and they've turned this beautiful, wonderful place where people used to live and love and foster children and raise them and try to give them sustenance, and they twisted it into this ugly. Ugly thing, Bob. They've taken out every bit of love from this planet and turned it into something that's just vile and vulgar. And what is that word that they used to tell us then? I denounce them. I denounce them like they used to tell me, I denounce the devil and all his evil works. Well, I denounce,
yeah, just like the end of the Godfather movie.
Right, I denounce this faux, and I mean faux, like in them faux diamonds and faux jewels you can buy on the jewelry network. You know, they're faux. They're false. I denounce them as the false prophets and the false liars and the false, just what they are. They're just filth and false and just ugly. And I denounce them as I would Satan. I had to throw that in. The church lady, and this
Satan?
Every other Wednesday night, is it not?
Right, exactly. We need to get some church lady audio.
This is my first. This is my first call on every other Wednesday night.
Yeah,
this is the first time I got to get in and throw a little religion, or
Well, we try. Sometimes it's difficult to restrain, constrain our. Religious conversations to only Wednesdays. Monday was a classic case in point.
Yeah.
With that church from the Gastonia, North Carolina, the Pilgrim Baptist Church of Gastonia, North Carolina, that decided that wanted to honor black music, so they put on overalls and flannel shirts, painted themselves with blackface, and then karaoke'd the music. They wouldn't even try to sing it.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I mean, well, yeah, I listened to the program and everything, and I probably even got in there a little bit.
I think I finished out the program with it, but, yeah, I mean.
It was just, it's a sadness that has been foisted on us since the earliest days when the first theft of a faith took place, and it took place in the Middle Ages, and it was the Catholic, Roman Catholic Church that Pharisees, they call them. Anybody was anybody that didn't believe what they believed was a heretic, and therefore they burn them at the stake.
And see, you need to understand that some of these, well, people like Bill Donahue.
Yeah.
That guy would gladly burn people.
He says this
outrageous crap, and then he keeps getting invited back on shows because he's good for manufactured controversy. Therefore, he's good for ratings because ratings are more important than journalistic integrity or journalistic factuality on these TV shows.
Right.
So the guy shows up last Monday or Sunday or whenever on the Today Show. And here's a guy who literally threatened to behead a sculptor for making a plastic Jesus that didn't have the decency of a little
chocolate.
White...
I think it was a chocolate one.
I mean, yeah, did I say plastic? I meant chocolate. Yeah, it was a chocolate Jesus that didn't have a little white chocolate loincloth over it, so...
was it anatomically correct?
It was, yes.
Well, that's depicting the factual... If there was this,
they showed him crucified exactly as he was crucified because he didn't have a little lace dress on like the Pope.
Well, I was wondering. Okay, did he talk to his friend Bob on the that gets this special pill that makes him wanted by all the ladies in the neighborhood? I see it all the time on TV. I can't help it. I just
that's not you, Bob, and it's not me, Bob.
No, it's not.
Bob.
You know, but I was wondering if this.
He wasn't in a Jesus. He wasn't in a state of chocolate arousal or anything.
I was just wondering about that.
No, he was just naked. But Bill Donahue called for the sculptor to be beheaded, and he also fostered riots in front of the art gallery.
You realize, you know, this is the head-on radio network and Nova AM, and I heard Mike speak of you the other night. You had written in and sent him an email, and he jumped on it. And I praise Mike Malloy just like I do you, because Mike doesn't pretend to be something he's not. He says, I'm an atheist. I'm an atheist. He says, I'm just an atheist. And he doesn't suffer a fool very often. Once in a while, he'll play with one like a cat plays with a mouse. But you know, that's kind of fun to listen to. But Bob, on the Head On Network, I hear the truth, and the truth seekers or the truth tellers are growing in number. We're not that timid. If we're given a medium, you talked about the media and the medium, and I'm saying the media is us. We speak the truth, and if you enlighten a person, one, just one, it doesn't matter by the hundreds of millions, if you enlighten one and you show them this truth, and you do it in a convivial way and explain to them, I'm not trying to change your thinking. I'm just trying to present to you something you are not presented by your leaders, by your elders, by your church people. And here is where you can look. If you have the courage to investigate your faith, your belief, your self, then take a look here, and then we'll talk. But don't tell me everything that you believe comes from the Bible, or it comes from this, or it comes from that.
Well, behind all of this, Bob, is a simple fact. You referenced the nonviolent nature of the Cathars.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there are no more Cathars.
Right. They were nonviolent. And
they were rounded up, and they were butchered, and they were slaughtered. It happened at a time in history when the church had just finally lost the Crusades. It was over. It was done. Everybody had been chased out of the Middle East, and the people who lived there had it back again.
But
the Kingdom of Jerusalem had fallen. So they took all those crusaders, those out-of-work crusaders. There's nothing like having an army come home to create a problem.
Aren't we working on that right now?
Out-of-work knights are a real problem, okay?
Out-of-work. Black, what is this, Blackwater outfit?
Well, yeah, we're going to have that problem, too. But they came home, and the church unleashed the Crusaders. They actually announced and called them Crusades.
Yes, they did.
Against, it was the Albigensian Crusade.
Yes,
they turned the Crusaders loose on the Cathars, and they slaughtered them to the last man, woman, and child.
That's right. And they killed them, men, women, and children. And
indiscriminately,
like that,
sure.
It's like that song.
And see, but wait, the Cathars went nonviolently to their graves because, frankly, they didn't much care. It was six of one, half dozen of another to them how they died.
Right.
Because they were going to move on to another celestial plane.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't resist.
And they were murdered.
Now, yeah. There's a lesson there. Nonviolence does not show up again until you get to Gandhi.
Yeah.
And how many thousands of Indians were murdered by the British, I don't know if there's even a fair count of.
There isn't.
Then it shows up again. A young theology student named Martin starts studying
Martin
Gandhi.
King Jr.
And he raises it up. And at that point, nonviolence has its American debut.
But wait,
and I'm all for nonviolence. But
right. The
way it is with these religion industrialists, when you get to the end of the day, you find that they're tied up with Christian Reconstructionism and Christian Dominionism, either of which would gladly kill you, me, our wives, our children, our grandchildren, and the beasts of the field in the name of Christ Jesus.
Absolutely.
So
right.
I talk about this stuff, Bob, because
absolutely. You're right.
I'm not when those bastards come, I am not going to embrace nonviolence.
Oh, I didn't say embrace.
And I wasn't suggesting that you had.
No,
But I'm trying to draw a distinction here, Bob.
I understand that. What I'm saying is that this that nonviolence or the true teachings of this Christ figure, if he ever existed, because I don't know if he ever existed. I don't even go there. But I'm saying he, if he ever existed, taught that. You know, he told his disciples when he was what was his name, Paul, the rock on which.
Oh, Peter. Yeah, Peter.
Whatever. When he whacked off that centurion's ear, you know.
Yeah, don't say whacked off on the radio.
Picked it up
okay.
And stuck it back on his head and poof, yeah. It was perfect again. Hey, come on. You know, that's a bit of magic, isn't it?
Right.
We're talking magic here. We're talking about a.
We're talking about a magician.
We're talking about let's stop being foolish. And the foolishness is that religion, in any way, shape, or form, if you are so religious and such a zealot that you believe that no other could have any concept of what you're talking about, let's take a look at you first, and you take a look at yourself. I'll look at me. And I'll tell you what, buddy, when you come to my door, I got a friend of mine. I got him. He hangs on my hip most of the time, and I call him Mr. Beretta. And he carries 15. Welcome home, boy, because I'm going to send you to see this true believer.
Yeah, I've got a couple of buddies that hang out here by the name of Smith and Wesson.
Yeah, yeah. Smith and Wesson's a nice friend of mine, too. I got a, you know.
Mr. Remington lives under my bed.
Oh, well, hey, Mr. Winchester hangs on my wall.
Yeah, okay.
You know? But see, you know...
Aren't we scary? Spooky liberals with guns.
Hey, no, I'm not a non-violent liberal, because I believe that if Martin Luther King Jr. had an army of these super zealots on his side at the time, instead of pacifists, okay, that march on that bridge would have been more bloody for the cops and the dogs and the guys hosing them down and beating them down and busting their skulls and hurting my black brothers and my black sisters and their mothers. And I am sad that I am a white man when I think about that march, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I am sick to death of hearing these filthy, like you were talking about this, and I don't even want to mention their names. You know, they're on every white bread. And I mean white bread. You're not even Wonder Bread anymore. You're just a piece of plain, empty white bread American crap. And I'm sick of you. You may have the same color of skin as I've got, but you got no soul. You have no soul, and you got to get soul only one place, and that's from a soul brother and a soul sister. And when you can sit down with them and eat and speak and feel comfortable in their
place, yeah, and listen to the music without feeling the urge to paint
and
your face,
be the only honky, the only Caucasian in the room. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just one, nobody else. Just you, maybe your wife, maybe your kids are there. They're playing with
you're
describing.
See, you're describing
and
something
don't
from
feel afraid.
Right, you're describing something from a beautiful time in American history. The Highlands School in East Tennessee. That is where Rose and it was started by a labor leader.
Okay.
And it was white folks and black folks. It was folks of all, you know, skin
ethnic persuasion.
Skin color, fiddly-dee.
Jew, Gentile.
Yeah. But they came. Muslim, they came. Christian. Rosa Parks came to the Highland School before she sat down on that and refused to give up her seat. Martin Luther King trained at the Highland School. Most at some point in time, the Highland School turned. It touched the lives of almost everybody involved in the height of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
And it created ungodly terror for the white power structure of East Tennessee. We've got people who've talked about it on the program before. Our good friend, the author Jeff Biggers, makes it a big part of his The United States of Appalachia. And again, for folks who haven't read it, that's a book that begs to be on your bookshelf.
Yeah.
We're doing some backsliding, though. We truly are, and it's happening across racial boundaries.
A gentleman by the name of Sidney Poitier wrote a beautiful a book named it was called The Measure of a Man. The Measure of a Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get my hands on it. I've just heard about it, but it's been promised to me.
I'll be interested to hear about it. Bob, I've got to roll on, my brother.
I know.
You have a wonderful evening, okay?
To you and to all of my true believers out there, listen to Malloy and Bob Kincaid, because they don't lie to you. They just take it head on and straight up, okay?
Exactly. Thank you, Bob.
So support them both, and to you, good night, my friend.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You going to make me take a break? Yeah, okay, you're going to stab me in the eye with a pencil if we don't take a break. Okay. I was going to get through the show without a break. Just going for the record. I could have been a contender. All right, we take a break. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Everything is made from dreams. Time is made from honey, slow and sweet. Only the fools know what it means. Temptation.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I can see.
And again,
again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out onto the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
Now, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, Joe Vecchio, the working man's thinking man. Moving to 11 a.m. to noon, June 18th, right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
You can stop scanning that dial, because he's right here, on the horn. And when he comes, it will be music to your ears. I better go get ready. He'll be here real soon.
You are the best in my car. You are my best in my car. You are the ultimate star. You pick me up from afar.
Minutes before the hour. We'll wrap it up now. I'm Bob Kincaid. Quick email from our good friend Patty, also out in North Dakota, who writes in with a bit of a correction. She says, I am a founding member of Patriot Guard, and we are not right-wingers. We allow no politics whatsoever. But I know for a fact we aren't, so, yeah. She says, love you. These are the folks who ride down to funerals where the Fred Phelps and the Phelps Tones are spewing their filth and drown them out and keep the grieving people from even so much as seeing the filth that is the Westboro Baptist Church. And I appreciate you doing it and all the people who do. Patty, sincerely I do. One last thing to sort of get off my chest, because it may annoy you, bother you, you may agree. For a long time now, I have asserted, and others have as well, I don't claim authorship or ownership of this idea, but I have been asserting it for quite some long time, that the anti-abortion industry is nothing more than the dupes of the right wing. Because with the exception of an occasional bone thrown to it, like criminalizing a process that is almost never used and doesn't exist, namely partial birth abortion, scissors in the back of the neck. Doesn't happen. Just doesn't happen. These people are cynically used by the Republican Party because the Republican Party has to have some method whereby they get out the vote. Because if these freaks stay home, The Republicans are guaranteed losers in every single election of a national scope, and many state and local ones as well. I don't think that there's any doubt that what that is true. They got to keep the abortionists, the anti-abortion people, they got the pro-fetus crowd. They got to keep them hanging on. Oh, if you only vote for us again, it'll happen this term. It'll happen this term. Jesus will be with us this term. And they walk on their knuckles and breathe through their mouths, and they go to the polls, and they have no more sense about what they're voting over than a pick an analogy. So that's how it happens. On the other hand, however, after yesterday, I have to at least ask the question. And the question is this. Does the Democratic Party treat organized labor the way the Republican Party treats the pro-fetus movement? You see, after being nicely passed in the House of Representatives, the Employee Free Choice Act, which is at its most base level a First Amendment affirmation of the freedom of association contained in the First Amendment, it died in the Senate yesterday. I wrote a big old long blog post about it. You can read it over at opednews.com. You can read it at our website. It's called Of Mice and Men. And it hammers on Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid pretty hard. Because if you recall back when the Democrats would threaten to filibuster a bill when the Republicans controlled it by an almost equally narrow margin, the Republicans would quickly remind the Democrats that if they so much as thought about filibustering, they would destroy the filibuster. And so the Democrats would tuck their tails between their legs and sit and meekly allow whatever piece of filthy Republican legislation they had in mind to pass, or would meekly allow people who were absolute pure poison to be elevated to the highest judicial benches and stations of government that we have. Sam Alito comes to mind. John Roberts comes to mind. Fredo Gonzalez comes to mind. John Bolton comes to mind. Condoleezza Rice comes to mind. Okay? And yesterday, with control of the Senate, the Republicans stood up and filibustered the Employee Free Choice Act, a very, very basic affirmation of the First Amendment rights of working people in this country. The Republicans stood up and killed it dead. They put a knife through its heart. And at no point did Harry Reid stand up and say, "By God, you bastards, filibuster this. You'll never filibuster another thing so long as you live, I promise you." He wouldn't even get in the poker game because Bill Frist wouldn't have done it either. It was all bluff. But Harry Reid can't bluff. Harry Reid can't play power politics. And so immediately after the Republicans killed employee free choice, the Democrats stood up and said, "Well, you know, we had a 51-48 vote." Harry Reid couldn't even stand up and demand an up or down vote like the right-wingers used to. "All we want is an up or down vote." That's all we wanted. That's all working people wanted yesterday, was a damned up or down vote. And Harry couldn't even mock the Republicans by putting their hypocrisy right back in front of their faces. But they did come out later and say, "Well, there's a real groundswell of support for this legislation, and we'll move toward this. Is going to be a big issue in 2008. Sure enough, it's going to be a big issue. We're going to need all the labor support." And labor went, "Darn tootin', and you'll have it too. We'll pump the millions to you, boys. And if you lose in 2008, we'll pump more money to you for 2010. And we'll keep pumping the money, and we'll keep getting out the vote, and we'll keep making sure people go to the polls." And late at night last night, I looked up and went, "Jesus, that's what the Republicans do with the abortion people. Am I right? Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow evening. Okay? I mean, I don't like the conclusion I reached at all. I don't like the idea that working people are being used in this cynical fashion that I find so loathsome and repulsive in the Republicans. And it's being done to us by our own? Is it? Somebody explain to me that I'm wrong and put some facts behind it so I don't have to feel this way. Please? I'd appreciate it.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow broke another landmark barrier today to close above 14,000. We'll have a market summary ahead. A 26-year-old Jordanian physician has been formally charged in a British court for conspiring with previously charged Bilal Abdullah and Kafil Ahmed in trying to blow up bombs in London and Glasgow. One of the men, Kafil Ahmed, remains in critical condition with burns over 90% of his body. Iraq's new government is making some progress. That's the latest word from Ryan Crockett, the U.S. diplomat in Iraq. Crockett testified this morning before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He told members that the recent troop buildup is just now hitting its stride. Sunni lawmakers returned to work in Iraq's parliament, ending a boycott that had been holding back Baghdad's political progress for more than a month. Earlier this week, lawmakers allied with radical Shiite cleric Maktoum al-Sadr did the same. Four U.S. soldiers and an Iraqi interpreter were killed by a roadside bomb yesterday during a patrol in East Baghdad neighborhood. Four other soldiers were wounded. In his new role as special envoy for the Middle East Quartet of Negotiators, Tony Blair told mediators there needs to be a, quote, clear political perspective, end quote, or a two-state solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Blair is optimistic and is playing up his success in the Northern Ireland peace process. Three bombings have claimed the lives of at least 41 people in Pakistan. One bombing at a mosque used by the Pakistan Army killed 11 Army recruits. Another attack killed 26 Chinese workers. And the last one, a car bombing, killed 7 students at a college. The attacks all took place at opposite ends of the country. It isn't known if they're related. New York City officials found asbestos in mud and debris, but said the air is safe to breathe after yesterday's Grand Central Station eruption. An underground steam pipe exploded, creating a scalding geyser of mud and steam that rose higher than the 77-story Chrysler Building. A 51-year-old woman died of an apparent heart attack. Two others remain hospitalized. NFL quarterback Michael Vick's pit bulls fighting alligators.